Right. So, well done, Deborah.
Barbara's going to be here tomorrow. Thank you very much. Very many people thank me, so I really appreciate that. Okay, have a great day. Stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Celebrity crime cases, front and center. Starting with O.J. Simpson, whose date with the court is tomorrow morning. CBS's Steve Futterman.
In the criminal complaint filed here this afternoon, O.J. Simpson is charged with 11 separate counts. As expected, Simpson is charged with armed robbery, assault with a deadly weapon, and conspiracy. But he is also charged with first-degree kidnapping and coercion. Two other men are charged along with Simpson. Both were part of his entourage when the alleged crimes took place. Simpson and the others will be arraigned in the morning. Simpson then will be formally told the charges against him. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the County Courthouse in Las Vegas.
Fred Goldman has staked his claim to the sports memorabilia O.J. Simpson is accused of robbing collectors to get back just as soon as the court case is done against him. Goldman's son, Ronald, was murdered along with Nicole Simpson, and the civil court ruling that found O.J. Simpson responsible for it awarded millions to the Goldmans. The murder trial of music producer Phil Spector. The jury says it is stuck.
How many ballots have you taken?
Four.
Without telling me which way the vote is going. Do not tell me how many in favor of guilt or how many in favor of innocence. Just the numbers.
7-5.
7-5, okay.
The judge did not agree to declare a mistrial. He's looking over case law, told the jury he'll decide in the morning. The interest rate banks charge each other has been cut to 4.75%. It is a big cut from the Federal Reserve.
The general feeling was that the Fed was going to cut, but only about a quarter a point. Instead, we got a surprise. We got a half a point rate cut, and the stock market liked that a lot. It had its best day in almost 5 years.
That's CBS's Anthony Mason. Wall Street saw the Dow leap nearly 336 points today. The Nasdaq soared about 70 points. Israel has evidently destroyed a building deep inside Syria, which may have contained nuclear equipment delivered from North Korea. CBS News Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
North Korea is a nuclear power. It has tested a nuclear device. It is believed to have 10 warheads of its own. And it has also agreed to dismantle its program. And the suspicion is that rather than really dismantle its program, North Korea is simply going to sell it to Syria.
Israel is tight-lipped about its air raid, though U.S. officials say such an attack so deep inside Syria would not be taken lightly. Cannot get lower than this. The criminals went into the grave to steal a necklace from a corpse, a gold medallion worth $20. Woman in a Wichita, Kansas crypt. That makes the second grave robbed there. The dead women were evidently cousins. Recapping on Wall Street today, the Dow was up almost 336 points to close at 13,739. The Nasdaq gained 70. Oil, $81.51 a barrel, up for 94 cents. This is CBS News.
Put Monday behind you. Tuesday's done, oh no worries. Wednesday's perfect to unwind. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go this summer with two new No Worries Wednesday mixed grills. Our classic grilled seafood and steak or our bold barbecue mixed grill. Enjoy two new mixed grills.
Let's go out back tonight.
Now you can order curbside takeaway online at outback.com. Just click and pick up.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
Do you know that Office Depot rewards you for shopping? Sign up now for the new Office Depot WorkLife Rewards program. It's bigger, better, and more rewarding than ever. Now you get 10% back on ink, toner, paper, design, print, and ship purchases, plus 1% back on nearly everything else you buy. It's free, and there's no limit to the amount of rewards you can earn. Rewards are given as an Office Depot reward card when you earn a minimum of $10 in rewards. Certain restrictions apply. Excludes HP ink and toner. Go to myworkliferewards.com for details.
University of Florida students are protesting the tasering of one of them. CBS's Peter King.
The day after campus police tasered him.
Oh, my God!
University of Florida student Andrew Meyer was out of jail, but he's not out of the woods. He could face several charges, including resisting arrest with violence, a third-degree felony. Student protesters are demanding that no charges be brought against Meyer and that the officers who tasered him be arrested.
What happened
in that auditorium yesterday was not only a physical assault, but an assault on reason itself.
Two officers are now on paid leave. The university has asked for an independent state investigation, and one from a student faculty group.
Belgium has been in political limbo since the elections on June 10th, so one frustrated schoolteacher decided to put the country up for sale. Gerrit Cease put the ad on eBay, suggesting that Belgium, a kingdom in three parts, would be for sale, though admittedly it comes second-hand, well-used, and $300 billion in debt. Just a comment, he says, on the situation. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Do you have a big presentation coming up? Need great-looking documents done right and on time? The Office Depot Design Print and Ship Depot will take care of it. Only at Office Depot will you find Xerox-certified print specialists to make sure your job is done right, guaranteed. Stop by an Office Depot store or visit us online 24/7 to request professionally prepared documents. Xerox-certified print specialists. Only at Office Depot, where we guarantee your documents are done right.
And now for the bonus round. Mary had a little lamb. What did Jerry have?
A silly salamander.
Correct. Snowmen are...
snow boys all grown up.
Correct. How fast can you get movies with Netflix?
As little as 30 seconds on your PC.
Correct! Netflix. Now there's two ways to get movies. DVDs in the mail fast and instantly on your PC in as little as 30 seconds. Netflix. It's that easy. Five movies for $5 a month.
Restrictions apply. See terms of use for start time and 5x5 details.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Rocking into your radio, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm delighted you're listening. We're live up and down the left coast and on that internet thing where people listen online. The link's there at peterbcollins.com. We've got a lot to talk about on the program today, and I'm sorry, I'm looking at the schedule. There will be no time to talk about O.J. Simpson. I'm just sorry, you'll have to go somewhere else. I'm sure Entertainment Tonight's all over it. Greta Van Susteren, Scott, well, case closed. And Nancy Grace, huh, she was there.
Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
We have a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who will spend the first hour with us. We'll introduce him in just a moment. Coming up next hour, we kick off with Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of the senator who is a candidate for president of the United States. She'll respond to Hillary Clinton's proposal just 7 months after the Edwards campaign unveiled their detailed proposal for health coverage for all Americans. Also on today's program, our regular Jason Leopold from truthout.org. He's got another story about evangelical extremists in the military imposing their religious values on others. And he's also been taking a look at the prospect of Democrats cobbling together some support from Republicans to change the president's policy on the occupation of Iraq. Melanie Sloan will be with us to kick off our third hour today. She's the executive director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They've got a new laundry list of ethically challenged elected leaders. It's called Beyond Delay. We'll also talk a little bit about the ethics reform that finally cleared both houses, and I believe it's been signed by the president. And it actually served up more than I expected. So we'll talk about that. At any moment, you can join this conversation. Call me toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. You want it digitally, numerically? 888-573-8372. And you can always email me. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Again, today, here on Tuesday, I'll be doing a doubleheader. I get an hour break, and then I'll be on Air America Radio from 7 to 10 Pacific time tonight. And among our guests, presidential candidate Mike Gravel will join us in the first hour. So hope you can tune in or log on for that. It should be a lot of fun. Charlie Savage writes for the Boston Globe. I just read a piece that he penned for one of my favorite publications, The Nation magazine. And his new book, which has yet to arrive here on my bush-bashing bookshelf, is called Takeover, the Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. Charlie, welcome to our program today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Nice to talk with you, and congratulations on your Pulitzer, and I think as important, really helping Americans understand the signing statement process used by President Bush and its history. He wasn't the first to cross his fingers as he's signing a piece of legislation and say, well, I don't agree with everything in here. But as you have described, this was something that was first advanced by a conservative scholar, Doug Kamek. And he has since distanced himself from the way it's being utilized in the Bush era. Take us back to the earliest usage of signing statements as a way to modify or at least offer a real-time, a contemporaneous explanation for the president's views of a piece of legislation that he has signed.
Sure, sure. I'm happy to. You know, this was, as you said, this was the centerpiece of that package that I won the award for this year, though I would hasten to add that it's just a tiny bit of the book, The Takeover. It's one chapter out of 13.
Okay.
Because it's really just one tool among a whole arsenal that this administration has brought to expanding the power of the presidency. But a signing statement is an official legal document that a president issues on the day he signs a law, and it consists of instructions to the executive branch about how they're to implement this law. And where it becomes controversial is where presidents say, you know what, this section of the law is unconstitutional in my point, in my view, and now it's unconstitutional in your view, and therefore you don't have to enforce it. And especially when this is a section of the law that constrains the president's own powers, that places some kind of limits on what he can do or some kind of requirement on what he must do even if he doesn't want to, that's where this becomes controversial, because then not enforcing the law really means not obeying the law. And so presidents have done this going back to the 19th century, but it was very rare until the mid-1980s. And then the Reagan legal team started issuing them much more frequently during the time which it wasn't just Doug Kamek. He was the head of the Office of Legal Counsel, which is an important office inside the Justice Department,
mm-hmm.
when that happened and kind of developed these policies. But the Bush administration has really taken it to a second exponential leap. President Bush has used signing statements to challenge more laws limiting presidential power than all previous presidents in American history combined.
700 counting?
He has, well, it's about 150 bills, but because there's more than one law in a particular bill,
right.
Congress lumps together many things, it's about 1,100 laws. And by contrast, all previous presidents in American history have challenged about 600 the first 220 years.
1,100?
So it's a totally different thing when you start talking about that many. So what Kamek has said, has told me at least, is that we didn't even really, when we were pioneering this sort of new way of using these more frequently back in the 80s, we had a much more modest point of purpose behind this. What we thought was, well, when there's some kind of ambiguously written law that a judge might later have to interpret because there's some kind of litigation over what it means,
mm-hmm.
we should leave a record of what the president thinks, and so that the judge can look at that as well as looking back at the debate that Congress had and sort of have a source of understanding of what the people who crafted the law were trying to do.
And Charlie, that seems quite reasonable to me, because I've seen a lot of challenges to legislation over the years, and a court will go to the record of a committee that heard the original bill and then amended it in a certain way, and they will look at what's called legislative intent. And so I'm not so put off that the executive branch would want to offer some glimpse of its intent in actually signing a bill as presented.
Right. And so what's happened is since then this has evolved much more in the direction that I was talking about earlier, whereas instead of here's a law that might mean two different things depending on how you interpret it, and I, the president, as I'm signing it, my understanding of it is that it means A, not B. And now it's the intent of Congress is clear. The intent might be interrogators aren't allowed to use torture, right? The intent might be absolutely the president must tell Congress how he's using the Patriot Act, how often and what situations and what they got out of it. That's not open to interpretation. It's very clear what Congress meant. But instead of just saying, here's my interpretation of it, the president is saying, you know what, I think this is unconstitutional, and so I'm interpreting this law as giving me an unwritten exception at my own discretion to not obey it, you know, as I see fit.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an enormously different way of using this previously obscure device. And so when you talk about using it to advance a very aggressive, out of the mainstream theory of a president's ability to defy Congress, and to do it with such great frequency as this administration has done, I think that's when people, when that came out last year, that's when people really began to sit back and say, well, wait a minute, is this really what, you know, our system of checks and balances was set up to contemplate, or is this exploiting some kind of loophole that should not have ever been there in the first place?
Charlie Savage with us from the Boston Globe here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's with us this entire hour, so if you have a question or a comment, bring it on. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. As always, your calls are subject to monitoring by the National Security Agency for quality control and keywords, including Osama bin Laden. Now, Charlie, walk us through, if you will, the rather bizarre debate and ultimately the signing of a bill with a signing statement. I'm thinking 2005, when John McCain, had a proud moment. He challenged the administration on its policies of detention and torture, in particular the use of waterboarding and other aggressive interrogation tactics, and he also was one of those who opposed the removal of habeas corpus rights for detainees at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere. But I believe he was skunked by the White House, even after he went to meetings and negotiated with them to try to find common ground, because the bill that was passed included a McCain amendment. It was a defense appropriation bill. But the signing statement that the president issued at the time he enacted the bill rendered it almost meaningless.
Right. But just a footnote, by the way,
sure.
You can't credit McCain with being against taking away habeas,
mm-hmm.
because he did vote to take away habeas as part of this. He didn't want torture, but he didn't want lawsuits either.
Okay, thanks. My mistake.
That's mm-hmm. a side note.
Mm-hmm.
I have an entire chapter just about the fight over the torture ban in my book, Takeover, because it's such a sort of illustrative moment that brings together so many different themes about what we've seen in the realm of presidential power over the last 7 years. So the back history is that in secret, in 2002, the Bush administration's legal team had crafted these memos that said to the CIA and the military interrogators that the president's power as commander-in-chief trumped laws and ratified treaties that forbade them from using torture, forbade them from using cruel and human and degrading treatment. He, as commander-in-chief, had exclusive control over questioning prisoners, and so they should obey him, not the law, not treaties that we've ratified when those two come into conflict. And so this had come out after Abu Ghraib in 2004. These memos had leaked, and everyone was outraged that, well, this is not what most people think, how the Constitution works. And the memos had been rescinded. But the sort of background theories were still floating around there. And then in January of 2005, when White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez, whose name had been on one of these memos, it was addressed to him, he commissioned it, was going to be made attorney general, he had let slip in his confirmation hearings that the administration didn't think that this treaty called the Convention Against Torture applied to the United States overseas, that it only prevented us from using torture on U.S. soil, which is another sort of theory that no one bought into. In fact, it was the Reagan administration that negotiated and signed this treaty, and the Reagan official who was behind that told Congress, wait a minute, that's not what we thought. We thought this was a global thing. But anyway, John McCain, who was tortured himself in Vietnam,
Indeed.
Was outraged by this.
Mm-hmm.
And so he launched a year-long crusade, essentially, to pass a new law that would make clear, that would close this loophole. It would make clear that this restriction applied no matter where the interrogators were, no matter where the prison was.
And Charlie, I'm sorry, it's commercial radio. Let me pause you there. We'll pick up right after a break. Charlie Savage is my guest. He writes for the Boston Globe, run a Pulitzer for his articles on the Bush administration and presidential power. His new book is called Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. We'll take a break and return. You can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. The Peter B. Collins Show.
Are you looking for that new dream home at a price that's not a dream? At Pacific Pride Homes, we really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year, and the fact that we can offer estate quality homes without the estate price. We are now providing special financing and pricing on two of our beautiful new custom homes located in gated communities in North Monterey County. We invite you to visit us at PacificPrideHomes.com for details and directions.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos.
One of the biggest benefits for us are the relationships that we establish with our customers. Our customers have said that they love coming to our place because we have great stuff and great prices.
The thing that makes us unique is the mix of things. It's a very eclectic mix. We've become a destination for a lot of people. They'll bring friends out. They'll do little mini tour buses and bring friends. So we really, really appreciate that. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. We have everything from French soaps to linens to wall hangings.
And it's gotten to the point where people think of us when they need a gift. It's not just a utilitarian purchase or frivolous, but they make us a regular stop when they need a gift.
We're open from 10 to 5 Wednesday through Sunday. Come by and have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scone. Everything's a taste, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins. 23 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Charlie Savage, a reporter at the Boston Globe. Won a Pulitzer Prize for a package of stories related to the power expansion of the Bush administration. His new book is called Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. Charlie, we like the one-word title, but the subtitle creep is something we're trying to push back on. So can you talk to your publisher about that?
It's a wordy subtitle, there's no doubt.
but it has very important issues. Now, I want to resume your narrative there. We were talking about the struggle in 2005 over Bush administration torture policy, the very public criticism from John McCain that led to a bill that appeared to have some compromises in it. I recall there was a flat-out ban on waterboarding included in that legislation. And take us now to when the president signed that bill and what the signing statement said.
Right. So McCain has fought a battle with Dick Cheney all year. Cheney has personally gone to Congress to say, don't pass this law banning cruel and human degrading treatment, or if you do, give the CIA an exception. McCain has refused to do that, and the Republican leadership in the Congress has refused to let their members vote on it. But finally, they can't wait any longer, and it turns out that rank-and-file Republicans join with Democrats in sort of a rare bipartisan rebuke of the White House and passed this bill overwhelmingly, so that even if Bush had vetoed it, which he had threatened to do, even though he hadn't vetoed anything for 6 years so far, they could have overridden the veto. So Bush calls McCain to the White House. He calls in the television cameras, and he says, you know what, he shakes his hand, and he sort of pretends like the bill is his idea all along, says what a great thing it is. And we all think the story is over, that he's just sort of been forced into this defeat, and that Cheney's been defeated. But then at 8 p.m. on December 30th, the day Bush signs the bill into law, this is the Friday night before New Year's Eve weekend.
Oh, that's a good place to bury something.
Oh, yes. When no one is in Washington, Congress is out of session, Bush is in Texas, most of the press corps is gone, and to the extent they're still in town, they've still gone home by 8 p.m. on the Friday night before New Year's Eve weekend.
Yeah.
He issues the signing statement that tells interrogators that regardless of the new law, he's still the commander-in-chief. Because of he's the commander-in-chief, because of the unitary executive theory, which is this sort of revisionist understanding of the Constitution they have, they should obey the president's instructions and their own superiors' instructions when interrogating detainees, not the anti-torture law. And so this whole year-long debate had been just a complete a joke, because they were saying Congress doesn't have the power to regulate me anyway. I exist beyond checks and balances. And we were right back to where we were in 2002 with the pre-Abu Ghraib memos, which supposedly had been rescinded.
Charlie, I got an email here from my friend Hal in Monterey, who I'll just tip you off. He's a lawyer. He says, does it really matter whether the president issues a signing statement? The law means what it means, and like, say, a line item veto, you can't choose what to enforce or what to follow.
Well, this is something, and I try to explain this in a way that even non-lawyers, unlike your friend Hal, can understand in very clear prose in the book. There's all these little catches in the system where it can be gamed, and in the national security arena is one of those places where it's very, very rare for these disputes over what the law is and whether or not it's being enforced correctly. It's just extraordinarily difficult for those things to get into court, because disputes over the president's constitutional powers don't always generate people who have standing to sue over them. What the government is doing in some overseas prison is a secret, and if someone is a foreigner and they're not on U.S. soil, they can't file a lawsuit. It's just extremely rare for the courts to get a chance to review what it is the executive branch is doing in this kind of a world. And so the executive branch has developed its own internal kind of Supreme Court. It's called the Office of Legal Counsel. And the OLC tells the executive branch whether what it's doing is legal or not. But the Bush administration has sort of figured out that by putting lawyers in an OLC who have a very broad, a very aggressive, out-of-the-mainstream view about what the president can do, is a way to game the system so that they'll always be told that what they're doing is legal, whether or not most independent legal scholars would agree with that. And so that's why its internal memos, its signing statements, its secret documents really do matter, really do have an impact, because it's never going to get before a court.
Well, and many of us feel if it did come through the courts that the Roberts Supreme Court, with Roberts and Alito, who are openly supportive of the so-called unitary executive theory, it's tough to believe that they would be an activist court and overturn it.
Well, this is another thing I have an entire chapter about in my book, Takeover, is although most of this has to do with internal executive branch battles and who the people are, the selections for who is going to fill Supreme Court vacancies, I believe, is another manifestation of this laying the groundwork for a long-term expansion of executive power.
We're going to take a break and return with Charlie Savage from the Boston Globe. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by great-tasting Smart Balance Omega Peanut Butter and by Emerson. Whatever the demand, whatever the challenge, with Emerson, you can consider it solved. I'm Charles Osgood. Economic theory states that two things affect the price of anything: supply, how much of whatever it is available, and demand, how many people are lined up to buy whatever it is. Basically, that's it. Neither supply nor demand is infinite. Now, let's talk about the price of gasoline.
The supplies of gasoline are at a two-year low, and demand for gasoline still continues to confound expectations by being a lot stronger than people think, and that's continuing to keep prices pretty well supported.
More from market analyst Phil Flynn of Aileron Trading after this. You know, Smart Balance Omega peanut butter is really one of a kind, a natural peanut butter that doesn't need refrigeration to prevent significant separation. It contains no refined sugar and no hydrogenated oil, and Smart Balance Omega peanut butter is deep roasted for a sensational peanut taste, and it contains 1,000 milligrams of omega-3s per serving. Now Smart Balance means more than delicious buttery taste, it also means delicious peanutty taste. Smart Balance Omega peanut butter. Nobody walks out on the African grasslands one afternoon and says, "This is where I'll put a telecom system." See, that's why businesses turn to Emerson. Emerson accurately predicts what world trends will mean for them so they can supply customers with cutting-edge technologies to create a modern wireless network across the vast African plain. Emerson anticipates customer needs, so when they're ready, Emerson's ready. Emerson, consider it solved. We all want the economy to be good. When the economy is good, everybody is better off. We can do things and go places. But when people do things and go places, they put more gasoline in their tanks. So do diesel trucks and trains and buses. Jetliners use more jet fuel. In other words, when demand for petroleum goes up, the supplies go down. And the more this happens, the higher the price gets.
I think that the fundamentals for oil are getting more bullish by the day. And if the economy survives the subprime crisis, then we're going to see the price of oil go substantially higher.
Or lower if the subprime crisis comes to a hard landing, which remains a possibility.
I think there were a lot of concerns that the slowing economy may lower the price of oil, but I think some of those fears are being discounted because the market expects the Fed to cut interest rates.
A senior analyst for a trading firm, Phil Flynn, looks at psychological and meteorological factors, too, like Caribbean storms and seasonal factors like approach of winter. Prices could go up or down. Things could get better or worse.
Get prepared for the worst. I mean, if you're going to have to buy heating oil, I would not expect prices to be cheap this winter.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
This Sunday on Rock Roller Real Estate, hear Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, talk about the great state of Wyoming. Jim has a special announcement about a project he's working on in Wyoming that'll be a unique opportunity for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, now covering over 30 real estate markets. Check us out on the web at rockrollerrealestate.com or call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
33 minutes past the hour as we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. The wife of Senator John Edwards, Elizabeth Edwards, is going to join us next hour. Should be interesting.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying to talk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta low.
that they cool. I see myself in the pistol smoke, fools. I'm the kind of G a little homies wanna be like, on my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
$1,600 Pennsylvania Avenue turned into a gangster's paradise? Well, that's one extreme interpretation. But they certainly have been single-minded about expanding presidential power. Charlie Savage, Boston Globe reporter, Pulitzer Prize winner, has written a book about this called Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. You can talk with him. He's here for the rest of this hour. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Let's hear from Dave in Eureka. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I am of the belief that we have a president who, in every way that he can, is making it known he does not accept any authority, jurisdiction, or oversight from Congress. And I think that's the message he's trying to convey.
Well, there's some very interesting ideas about that, and I'm going to reference in a moment Jack Goldsmith's new book, but let's get a quick reaction from Charlie. Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, I think that's right. That's sort of a quick way of looking at the bottom line, which is the idea that the presidency, especially in matters of national security or, you know, control over the executive branch, is beyond the ability of Congress to regulate. The checks and balances don't come into play in those situations because all the power about what to do has to be concentrated in the hands of the president alone. The one thing I would add to that, though, is that although this is the Bush administration, I don't think that this agenda comes from George W. Bush. This is an agenda that comes from Vice President Dick Cheney and his experiences 30 years ago in the mid-1970s as the White House Chief of Staff to Gerald Ford. That was right after Nixon had fallen. Yep. And Watergate in Vietnam had sort of woken Congress back up, and they were passing new laws to impose checks on presidential power again to bring the imperial presidency, as Arthur Schlesinger called it, under control. And when you look through Dick Cheney's files at the Ford Presidential Library there, you can see that he saw this as an outrage. He thought that this was going to weaken the commander-in-chief, that this was not warranted, and he would spend the next 30 years trying to sort of roll back what he saw as the excesses of that era. Mm-hmm. He tried it in Congress. He was always trying to persuade his colleagues not to put checks on presidential power. He was defending the Reagan's right to bypass the Boland Amendment during the Iran-Contra scandal. When he was Secretary of Defense to George H.W. Bush, he was saying, let's launch the Gulf War without going to Congress for permission, because to show that we can do that as president, essentially. And, well, of course, the first President Bush rejected that advice. But the second President Bush, who had very limited experience in foreign affairs, national security, and basically almost anything, had accepted Vice President Cheney's advice on this, and they made it a central agenda from the very first day in office. One of the things my book documents is that in the first meeting of the White House counsel's office in January of 2001, long before 9/11, Alberto Gonzalez conveyed from Cheney and Bush instructions to the legal team that they were to seek out opportunities to expand executive power, that a core agenda from the beginning was going to be to leave that office stronger than it was when they inherited it. Mm-hmm. And so that has just been a driving agenda in all kinds of different policy controversies that we've seen over the last 7 years, from the Energy Task Force papers to the choices of executive branch lawyers for the Supreme Court, mm-hmm, to all these 9/11 issues.
Dave, thank you for your call. And, Charlie, what you just said is really important, that from day one, the Bush administration was intent on expanding presidential power in every conceivable way. Absolutely. And so 9/11 presents an opportunity to pass the Patriot Act. A lot of that stuff was on the shelf, and all they had to do was cut and paste it into that huge bill. And, you know, that's also set the stage for the post 9/11 legislation authorizing us to go after whoever it was who attacked us. And that has been interpreted so liberally, and I use that word intentionally, by this neoconservative administration to claim that virtually anything the president wants to do has been authorized by the Congress, even though people like Tom Daschle, who crafted that legislation, say explicitly that they did not give those powers and that they removed clauses requested by the White House that would have been expanders.
That's right. Daschle says that the White House asked them to say that they were also authorizing the use of military force on U.S. soil, and that they would also authorize the president to use military force to go after people who posed other kinds of threats and weren't connected to 9/11. And the administration and Congress rejected that and passed a more limited authorization to use military force. But what's interesting is then if you go and you look at the Office of Legal Counsel memos that were being secretly written right after that, the Bush administration was saying to itself, it doesn't really matter what Congress has told us we can and can't do in statute, because it's totally irrelevant what Congress thinks, because we have this inherent unwritten power as commander-in-chief to do whatever we want anyway, to use military force on U.S. soil if need be, or to attack some other country that wasn't connected to 9/11 to head off some kind of similar a threat that we might perceive.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you bring up, you know, the Patriot Act, you know, the Patriot Act is a very controversial piece of legislation, and it's become a symbol of to civil libertarians of the government going too far in taking away individual rights in the name of making us more secure. But from another point of view, you know, the Patriot Act is okay, because at least with the Patriot Act, it was Congress deciding what the rules should be.
Well, if they had read it, yeah.
Right, but at least on paper, right? Some other body,
yes.
The separation of powers, an independent body deciding what the rules are going to be within which the executive branch must operate.
And well, you can make
change those rules if they want to.
You can make the same argument about odious legislation like the Military Commissions Act and this summer's NSA amnesty bill.
The Protect America Act, indeed. Yes, you know, so there's presidential power as Congress chooses to give it to the president, and there's no doubt that has gone way up under the politics of presidential power over 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's separately this question of what the president can do, whatever Congress says, the sort of inherent power to act even in defiance of prohibitions that Congress has passed.
Yeah.
Does the president get to set his own rules, or does he just have to take the rules that he can get from Congress or that he can browbeat into giving them?
Charlie Savage with us.
Both levels, presidential power has expanded enormously.
Excuse me. Charlie Savage is our guest. He writes for the Boston Globe, and his new book is called Takeover, with a lengthy subtitle that I'll read at least one more time today. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to talk with him, 888-573-8372. No relation to Michael Savage, right, Charlie?
Michael Savage's name isn't even Savage.
I know.
He just stole that, and he's messing with my brand.
Good for you. He's a wiener.
Exactly.
I have been working through the new book by Jack Goldsmith called Terror Presidency. He'll be a guest on this program. The latest scheduling is for September 28th, and I'm looking forward to talking with him. And he held the office that you have referenced several times, Charlie, the Office of Legal Counsel. It's just down the hall from the Attorney General, and the job of this person is to provide the legal advice to the president on specific issues to try to remain in conformity, and it's been a revolving door. We had Jay Bybee in there for just a minute or two, and then they gave him a lifetime appointment to a federal court. John Yoo was there, and he reported to Jack Goldsmith that he couldn't continue because he and John Ashcroft didn't get along. Goldsmith only lasted about 8 months, and now I've lost track. Who's the current occupant of the Office of Legal Counsel?
It's a guy named Stephen Bradbury, who's never been confirmed by the Senate. He's just the acting head.
I see.
He replaced Goldsmith when Goldsmith resigned in 2004.
Now, one of the interesting things for me about the Goldsmith book, and it affirms an article I've got up on the screen here that you published in the Globe on May 28th of 2006, and that is that the chief counsel to the vice president, David Addington, who has been at Cheney's side for more than 20 years in various capacities, he's the heavy in all this. And Goldsmith paints a picture that David Addington is simply uncompromising in terms of his belief in presidential power. He considers it almost absolute. I'd use the word dictatorial. And even when the Republicans controlled both houses of Congress, Addington repeatedly refused to go to Congress to codify the power grabs that the administration had already implemented. And this gave Jack Goldsmith some gas. Goldsmith appeared to support the general policy aims of the administration related to torture, detention, those issues, but he took exception to the methods in which the administration was asserting this authority and then practicing it.
Yeah, David Addington is a key player in this entire story. I have a long portrait of him in my book as well, and I have several chapters that focus just on this question of, like, what does the president have to do vis-a-vis Congress versus what can he do on his own, which is also the subject of Jack's book. Although my book also goes much deeper into history and talks about other issues like the Supreme Court as well. David Addington has been at Cheney's side since the Iran-Contra scandal. That's when they first linked up. And he was also Cheney's top aide in the Pentagon. And he is sort of the intellectual heavy lifter behind Cheney's theories. It's Cheney's clout and Cheney's desire to go back to the pre-Watergate era of the imperial presidency, though he wouldn't use that term, that is driving this. But David Addington is the guy who on a day-to-day level is doing the work, as it were, of fighting the bureaucratic battles and shaping policy in a way that doesn't just take care of whatever short-term problems are in front of them at that moment, but does so in a way that leaves a precedent that future presidents can cite as well when they, too, want to do something sort of unilaterally. So David Addington has always been a big foe of the idea of going to Congress and asking them to pass a statute that says you can wiretap without warrants or you can evade the Geneva Conventions or whatever it is they want to do for that, you know, with any particular policy, because he says if you go to Congress, then you're conceding that it matters what Congress thinks. And we don't want to concede that. We think the president can do this stuff on his own, and we're going to show that the president can do that stuff on his own. And so that's part of this longer-term agenda that I've been talking about of not just increasing the power for them to use up until January of 2009, but to permanently reshape American democracy by concentrating more unchecked power in the White House for all presidents, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, forever, 10 years from now, 50 years from now,
mm-hmm.
to use when in some, you know, controversy that we can't even conceive of now when some future president wants to do something that the rules don't allow him to do and that he doesn't think that Congress will change the rules to allow him to do.
Well, I share that view. I do believe that this is above partisanship, that it really is a matter of how we do provide checks and balances in this system of government. That said, I have very immediate concerns about how this administration will attempt to use these expanded powers between now and January 20th of 2009. And but I do agree that we have to look at the long term and try to find an important balance there. One other quickie, we got to go to a break in a minute here, Charlie. You referenced that many of these expansive desires were articulated from day one of the Bush administration. And I'm just curious if you believe that 9/11 was a convenient episode that permitted them to escalate this power grab.
I don't think I'd phrase it quite that way, but the basic thought you're getting at is absolutely correct. It was a pre-existing agenda that was dramatically escalated and intensified by 9/11 because 9/11 created a whole slew of new opportunities to take actions in such areas as detention, interrogation, surveillance that would establish precedents expanding executive power. And it provided the sort of rhetorical political environment that would be more conducive to making Congress sit on its hands as the White House was seizing more authority, to making the public support the idea that a stronger commander-in-chief means the country will be safer, which is an idea that goes exactly to the opposite of what the founders thought. They thought that it was too risky to have concentrated power because human beings are flawed, that you need to have collective deliberation about what the rules should be, that Congress should be making the hard decisions about how does a president get to treat captured prisoners, for example. But this sort of turned that on its head, provided both the political context and the sort of policy opportunities to throw this agenda into overdrive.
And I think it was propelled in some ways by people who have insufficient personal doubt. They're just so self-righteous, they figure, well, I'll never abuse this power. I'm doing this to protect the American people. It's absolutely okay. We're going to take a break and return with Charlie Savage, his new book, Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. He writes for the Boston Globe and won a Pulitzer for his reporting. More in a moment, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
Tom Hartman.
Why is it that it's the guys who've served in combat, like John Kennedy had his boat blown out of the water, who are the ones who speak of peace?
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression.
And the ones who have never served in combat are the ones who are all gung-ho to fire off the bombers.
Tom Hartman, live every morning 9 to noon on KRXA 540.
You now on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans, and people say we act like clowns.
8 minutes in front of the hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. Again, we're talking with Charlie Savage, a reporter at the Boston Globe, the author of a new book called Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. And he's got a column in The Nation, the current issue that just arrived in my mailbox the other day. And, Charlie, I'd like to get your reaction to the nomination for Attorney General of Judge Michael Mukasey. And I learned a couple of interesting tidbits about him today. He was Klaus von Bülow's lawyer. Now, that's a claim to fame. And he also has said that what he thinks is wrong with the Patriot Act is just the name.
Well, he's an interesting guy. He's definitely not the same category of potential attorney general that Alberto Gonzalez is. I mean, he's clearly a conservative, but he's also, you know, an intellectual heavyweight on his own. Mm-hmm. And the most interesting thing to say about him is that he was the first judge to review the case of Jose Padilla, who was the American citizen who was arrested on U.S. soil and who was being held for several years as an enemy combatant without charge or trial. And this is one of the most sweeping new authorities the Bush administration has pioneered for the presidency: the ability to imprison American citizens captured on U.S. soil by civilian law enforcement agencies, and instead of giving them a trial, just to hold them without access to a lawyer indefinitely at the discretion of the executive alone.
Mm-hmm.
Mukasey was had this guy before him in court right when the Bush administration first declared him to be an enemy combatant and wanted to cut off access to his lawyer. And as the judge in that case, he, back in 2002-03, he resisted the White House's theory there, at least to the extent that he said there's no way that you can take this guy's lawyer away. He's got to be able to have access to his lawyer. And so that shows that he was, at least in the past, willing to hit the brakes from time to time on some of the most extreme manifestations of the Bush administration's presidential power.
And I've read some citations from his order, and it's very interesting because he underscored that it was an order and not a request, yet the Bush administration took almost 3 years to provide Padilla with a lawyer.
Yeah, well, what they did was they yanked him out of Mukasey's jurisdiction and moved him down to a military brig in the South and got a new judge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the end of Mukasey's involvement in that case. And you have to also understand, Mukasey, on the other hand, did say that it was lawful for the administration to hold him as an enemy combatant without charge, just that they couldn't take away his access to his lawyer.
Indeed.
So he's certainly no, flaming liberal on these kinds of issues, but the mere fact that he resisted in some way, and yet now they've named him to be attorney general, is remarkable.
It is, and hopefully he will have the chops to rebuild the Justice Department that's been devastated by the politics and the lack of intellectual leadership from Alberto Gonzalez. Charlie, in summing up here, how do we repair this? Will we ever recover the rights that we've given up under the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, and this NSA, I call it the NSA Amnesty Bill? Or will we see, modest bites to roll back the most extreme elements, as we saw with the librarians and the Patriot Act? But it appears to me that we're stuck with most of this stuff for a long, long time.
Well, there's a couple things to say about that. One is that, the conclusion of the book Takeover, I think about these issues and I talk to people about them some, and I use the image that of a one-way ratchet. The presidential power can be increased a lot more easily than it can be rolled back again.
Yeah.
And again, you've talked about legislation, but I think more important are the precedents of a president taking action unilaterally without legislation, sometimes in the face of laws that say he can't do something. He said, well, I am the commander-in-chief and I can do it anyway. These things are now not just theories, they are precedents, they're part of our history, and that means that future presidents are going to be able to cite them too. And when they want to do something. And so that's why it's so hard to sort of put the genie back in the bottle. On the other hand, presidents have to be willing to do that, and whoever the next president is and the legal team that he or she will hire will be very important in sort of whether this becomes even more routine and sort of worked into our internal norms, or if it just sort of looks like an aberration that stands out in American history. And so one of the things I've been doing as I go around trying to get people to, pay attention to the issues that are described in this book is to say that we have a 2008 presidential election that's been going on for months now, and no one, basically, from either party who's running in the primaries has said much of anything about this. At least certainly none of the main candidates have.
Only Senator Dodd, who has talked about trying to fix the Military Commissions Act.
True. But Dodd's not going to get the nomination,
yep.
And that's just one tiny piece of the whole. And
yep.
Then there's a whole other party that said almost nothing. And so I'm trying to say, at the very least, people who want to be president should be asked what their views are on executive power, what limits, if any, they will respect if voters entrust them with the White House,
mm-hmm.
before the election, before they move into the White House.
And we haven't heard any of these candidates, when, confronted with this expansion of presidential power, say, oh, me? No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't want that power. The Bush administration, Bush Cheney didn't say anything about this in 2000. That should not be allowed to repeat itself in 2008. And so that falls upon my fellow journalists and debate moderators,
mm-hmm.
ordinary people who go to campaign events to ask these questions.
Charlie Savage from the Boston Globe, the new book, Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. When I get it, I'm going to read it, Charlie, and we'll invite you back.
Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Coming up next, Elizabeth Edwards talks about her husband, Senator John Edwards, in the run for president here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Paul.
And Cynthia.
Of the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden.
and we'd like to thank you for supporting this locally owned and operated Carmel business for nearly 40 years.
Nestled in Carmel by the Sea, the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden occupy a beautiful space on Dolores between 5th and 6th, showcasing an array of books on local interest, new releases, bestsellers, novels, children's, metaphysical, and much more. Plus, you'll enjoy taking a good look at our music, healing tools, cards, statuary, fountains, and more.
Proud to be a part of the Carmel business community, we invite you to see us soon.
Pilgrim's Way offers one-on-one intuitive counseling in the bookstore. You may call ahead for an appointment or just walk in. Whether you're a local resident or a visitor to our beautiful peninsula, we have something for everyone.
The Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, between 5th and 6th on Dolores.
Discover an imaginative adventure. Pick up a good read at the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Fed makes a bold move.
We got a surprise. We got a half a point rate cut, and the stock market liked that a lot.
New details on that Israeli airstrike in Syria.
The strike destroyed a building Israeli intelligence believed housed nuclear equipment.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. On Wall Street, happy days are here again. The Dow shot up 335 points, its biggest one-day point gain since 2002 after the Federal Reserve moved aggressively to keep the economy out of recession, cutting its benchmark interest rates not by a quarter but by half a percent. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason.
The Fed is basically saying that conditions have changed significantly since its last meeting. The Fed is clearly worried about this seizure, essentially, in the credit markets. They're trying to sort of loosen up the flow of money and get the credit market moving again, because that's slowing down the whole economy.
Mason says the stock market believes this is just a first step, that the Fed will have to keep cutting rates in the months ahead. The credit crunch started with the subprime mortgage crisis. In addition to the Fed, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports the House has voted to provide some relief.
The measure is the first Congress has taken to directly address the big rise in foreclosures around the country. The bill would loosen the rules for FHA-backed mortgages, so people who bought their homes with low teaser rates and suddenly now have monthly payments they can't afford can refinance and stay in their houses. Normally, if a homeowner has missed a payment, he wouldn't qualify for an FHA loan. Under this proposed law, he could, if it was because of a sharp hike in the amount of the payment. The measure, which still goes to the Senate, also raises the limit so those with more expensive houses can qualify too. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now this.
So I'm driving my Chevy through the neighborhood, and my neighbor hasn't cut his grass in like a month. I want to call the cops, which would make me a jerk, but I would miss seeing the pink flamingos in his lawn. Basically, the guy's got a maintenance problem, and that got me thinking about my Chevy. Keeping it running great is important to me, and unlike my neighbor, I like taking care of my stuff. That's why when it comes to service, I take it right back to my Chevy dealer and drive it down the Good Wrench service lane.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Tomorrow, I'll get an oil change, all four tires rotated, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection. Good Wrench and Go helps keep my Chevy in great shape, just in case I ever need to go on safari at my neighbor's yard.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Fall is a great time to Good Wrench and Go for all your maintenance needs. See your local Chevy Good Wrench dealer today or log on to goodwrench.com.
12 days ago, Israel launched a mysterious airstrike inside Syria. The Israelis aren't saying anything about it, but CBS News correspondent David Martin has some details from U.S. officials.
The target of the strike was a building which in Israeli intelligence believed housed nuclear equipment, and it was launched 3 days after a North Korean ship docked at a Syrian port and unloaded a unidentified cargo.
The building, which had been under surveillance by an Israeli spy satellite, was destroyed. U.S. intelligence isn't sure what was inside, but officials say there are signs Syria is trying to develop a nuclear capability with North Korea. A Syrian cabinet minister says that's rubbish, and North Korea, which recently agreed to dismantle its nuclear program, denies any involvement. American diplomats in Iraq are on a short leash. The U.S. Embassy has suspended all diplomatic convoys outside the heavily fortified Green Zone while it conducts a security review. Last weekend, private security guards killed 8 Iraqi civilians after a convoy was attacked. Las Vegas prosecutors have thrown the book at O.J. Simpson, charging him with 7 felonies, including kidnapping.
The stakes just got much higher for Simpson and his co-defendants.
3 other men are also charged. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen thinks one or more of them might agree to testify against the others.
The potential sentencing range now ratchets up the pressure on Simpson and his co-defendants, pretty much up to life in prison. So an already serious case just got much more serious. And that, of course, is a strategy that plays clearly in favor of the district attorney when it comes to potential plea deals.
Simpson's arraignment is scheduled for tomorrow. After a long trial and 7 days of deliberation, the jury in the case of music producer Phil Spector is at an impasse. The judge questioned the jury foreman this afternoon.
How many ballots have you taken?
4.
The jurors are split 7-5, but which way they're leaning hasn't been disclosed. Spector's charged with murdering actress Lana Clarkson, who was found shot to death in his Los Angeles home more than 4 years ago. The judge told lawyers he might let the jury consider a lesser charge, involuntary manslaughter. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You put Monday behind you. Tuesday's done, oh no worries. Wednesday's perfect to unwind. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go this summer with 2 new No Worries Wednesday mixed grills. Our classic grilled seafood and steak or our bold barbecue mixed grill. Enjoy 2 new mixed grills.
Let's go out back tonight.
Now you can order curbside takeaway online at outback.com. Just click and pick up.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
You know that Office Depot rewards you for shopping? Sign up now for the new Office Depot Work-Life Rewards Program. It's bigger, better, and more rewarding than ever. Now you get 10% back on ink, toner, paper, design, print, and ship purchases. Plus, 1% back on nearly everything else you buy. It's free, and there's no limit to the amount of rewards you can earn. Rewards are given as an Office Depot reward card when you earn a minimum of $10 in rewards. Certain restrictions apply. Excludes HP ink and toner. Go to myworkliferewards.com for details.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Six minutes after the hour, coming up later this hour, our weekly interlude with Jason Leopold from truthout.org. And next hour, we'll open up the free speech zone with Melanie Sloan and a report on ethics in Washington. Doesn't take long. But first, we've got an exclusive interview for you today here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. Joining me now is Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Senator John Edwards, Democratic candidate for president. Mrs. Edwards, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be with you.
Tell me what your thoughts are as Hillary Rodham Clinton has rolled out her health care plan, which is an awful lot like the one that John Edwards introduced to us months ago, complete with the details of how it would work and how he would pay for it.
It is sort of amazing. We appreciate the endorsement. If this is a imitation being the sincerest form of flattery, this is certainly looks and smells a lot like John's healthcare plan that he announced in February. It's one of the very first things he did after he announced the president, because it is one of the most pressing issues. And if she was going to adopt his plan, I don't know what took 7.5 months, but we're glad to have the company. The truth of the matter is, one of the reasons John did it so early is because he wanted to convey how important it was as an issue to Americans and let people know what priority he would put on it as president, that it would be one of the first things that he did as president.
And, well, the increases in the cost of health care and higher education are the hidden taxes on working families that have been ramped up substantially since George W. Bush took office.
It is unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, when you talk about how much people who haven't insurance are finding that their rates are going up and their coverage going down, you know, their limitations on chronic care or their co-pays or other things. It's not just that the rates are going up, but that they're less and less is covered by those policies. And, of course, you're exactly right about college tuition, which has increased geometrically almost every year since Bush has been president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're not supporting the kinds of things they need to be supporting in the different states, the states look for someplace else to get their revenue, and one of the easiest places to look are the pockets of college students.
And Mrs. Edwards, your health issues have been widely reported, and for me, you have offered, I think, a kind of inspiration for people facing cancer and other very difficult chronic or potentially life-threatening diseases. And I'm wondering, just from your own perspective here, as somebody who has been using the healthcare system, relying on it to save your own life, how important is this, and can we ever arrive at the point where we really believe that every American is entitled to basic health care?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think we're there. I think that the people of this country are ready to have it's not just for themselves, but for their neighbors, for the children who sit next to their children in classrooms. You know, right now we have 47 million people uninsured, and I don't think people in this country think it's right, and I don't think it's also, they also don't think it's right that the people feel locked into a job they don't like because they don't dare leave because they have health care in this job, and will they have it in the next job? If they do, will they exclude their pre-existing conditions or their children's pre-existing conditions? I think it was amazing as I go across the country, the uniformity with which people believe that it's finally time for universal health care. Now, it's not going to be easy to do, but not because the people aren't put behind it, but because the moneyed interest who make money on the health care system as it stands today are going to stand in our way. And they're the reason we didn't get health care in 1993 or any step in between. You know, they used their lobbyists in Washington to hold fundraisers for members of Congress and to ply them both with threats and with cash if they don't support the agenda of big insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, and they've been getting their way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time. It's going to take somebody pretty courageous to stand up to them, and it's also, you know, going to take the will of the American people to say finally that we've had enough of government run for and by big business, and we want to turn it back to the people. We need a messenger who believes in that, and you know, which means we need a messenger who believes in change. And I'm convinced that John is that person. I think we do have a couple of change candidates in this race. Mrs. Clinton, who's done her health care plan yesterday, is not one of those change candidates,
mm-hmm.
because she does believe that the system works as it is, that we can continue to listen to lobbyists and take their money and do business with them. And John recognizes that they have been the impediment to the health care that we need.
Well, from my perspective, Mrs. Edwards, the senator, as a successful trial lawyer, has the chops, the skills, and the motivation to really fight for the average working family in this country. And I think that separates him, particularly when the plans are more or less the same, and we have to acknowledge that they're proposals subject to the vagaries of congressional passage and approval. But one central point where I disagree with all of the three major candidates to date is that I believe that the for-profit approach to healthcare delivery is an utter failure, and that we have to acknowledge that. And while I recognize that the insurance companies are very powerful and we're going to have Harry and Louise back threatening socialism on, you know, 1/6 of the U.S. economy, I think we have to confront the fact that we have failed. The 47 million uninsured is just one symptom of that failure, but I believe that we need to move to a single-payer universal health coverage plan in this country.
Well, I have to say, I talk about Harry and Louise all the time, how they, you know, they looked like our neighbors and sounded like our neighbors. Their living room couch looked a lot like ours, but they weren't. They worked for the insurance companies and the drug companies. You're exactly right, whose interest is in profit, in that bottom line, and not in the quality of care that we get across the board. And they do stand in our way, but I do think that one of the reasons they were able to stand in our way is that they instilled in the American people a great deal of fear about a government-operated health care system. And first of all, we didn't do a very good job. In fact, we did no job at all of responding to them in 1993. We just caved and pulled the health care plan entirely. But the other thing is that they did that because they knew that people have, because it's health care, people have an unease about disrupting their health care. I mean, I got recently, of course, got chemotherapy. If in the middle of my chemotherapy I was told that the health care system was going to be turned upside down, that the conduit for my treatment, my insurance company, was no longer going to exist, and there'd be some federal office someplace that would handle it, I might be afraid. I wouldn't personally, but I know a lot of people in my position might be afraid of that interruption. And one of the things that John's plan does, and Senator Clinton has adopted this portion of John's plan as well, is that among the available providers for every American will be a government plan. So the American people will be choosing whether or not, and frankly, when they want to move to a government provider. So it's unlikely to happen on day one, but because they have less overhead, they're more likely to provide a better coverage for people, and we would expect people over time to gravitate to that public provider. And the American people, not Congress, you know, with lubricated pockets from those lobbyists, but the American people individually choose single payer. And that kind of powerful way to move to single payer, we think, is the way that will, that is the first easiest to achieve, yeah. And the second, the one that is going to not scare people or allow people to be scared in the way that they were in 1993.
I respect that. It's a very complex set of problems, and the transition to a solution will not be easy, and particularly when these powerful, vested, and wealthy interests can use the media and all kinds of propaganda to scare Americans into inaction. And that's what we've seen for a long time, and we've got to move past that, and so I understand that tactics may be necessary.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of support for this system. I suppose that's one of the reasons that this proposal, which is supposed to be one of the reasons that Senator Clinton has embraced John's plan. But you'll hear from these companies, we spend all of our money on research and development, and pharmaceutical companies say it all the time, when in fact they spend about twice as much on advertising and convincing you first that they need your product, and convincing Congress not to pass laws that inhibit their profits.
Well, if you'd like to pass along, here's a free idea for you. I think that in addition to rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans to pay for expanding health care coverage in this country, I think we should come up with a targeted tax on pharmaceutical products that are advertised on television, because many of those, like that
idea,
like restless leg syndrome, and that thing that
who knew there was such a thing? I thought my foot was just asleep.
And that drug that gives males the potential for 34 hours.
There's no woman who's looking forward to that drug.
I think those should be taxed, because many of these are in some form, I wouldn't call the restless leg syndrome a recreational drug, but these are optional drugs. These are not things that are necessary often for people's basic health and survival. And I think we ought to take a look at that, because that's where the real profit centers of some of the big drug companies are today.
Absolutely. Well, there's a real question about whether direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs makes any sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
If a drug company wants to make certain that that individuals know that there is a treatment out there for some condition that they may think they're just going to have to suffer with, then they can support the organizations that I don't know what the organization is for restless legs, but they could support the American Diabetes Association if there was a drug that could address those issues instead of doing the direct to consumer advertising.
We're talking with Elizabeth.
People to the doctors unnecessarily, honestly.
Right. We're talking with Elizabeth Edwards, and I'm Peter B. Collins. And Mrs. Edwards, I have to tell you that I will always have the deepest respect for the senator, because in June of 2006 he spoke at the Take Back America conference, and he issued a very clear apology for his mistaken vote for the authorization for military force that led us into the debacle in Iraq. And I believe that his courage and his willingness to acknowledge that mistake really shows his wisdom head and shoulders above, particularly Senator Clinton, who still can't find it in her to say, gosh, I regret that vote. And he also has distinguished himself by describing GWOT, even Rumsfeld says the Global War on Terror was a terrible moniker, but he's willing to take on the fear-mongering and talk smartly about what we need to do to fight terrorists and not, simply declaring war, spying on the American people, and creating a fascist police state. So I really think that those issues distinguish him, and I hope he will accentuate them, because I'm really looking for leadership from the presidential candidates right here, right now, to help guide the Senate and the House into a productive confrontation with the Bush administration. We need that, and we need that now. And again, I feel that John Edwards has more fight than Obama and Clinton. I feel Dennis Kucinich is great on the policies. He just can't get the traction to really get the kind of attention he deserves.
I agree that Dennis is very thoughtful about the things that he wants to say. I don't always agree with him, but he does not lack for ideas. I'm happy to accept the compliments of John. He didn't first apologize for that vote in June of 2006. I think he did it in 2005 in a Washington Post editorial.
Mm-hmm.
And I was proud of him for being able to do it. The kind of leaders who actually tell us the truth, even when it doesn't reflect well on them, are exactly what we need right now.
And Mrs. Edwards, this is the reason I can't support Hillary Clinton. I think her judgment regarding foreign policy is flawed. And I know it's tough out there because she's a woman and she's the front runner and the media's put a halo around her. But I think that's one of the fundamental issues that needs to be addressed in this campaign.
I couldn't agree with you more. The idea of leadership and our need for it on these really critical issues. You know, the May 2007 vote on funding for the war, the one that came after the president had vetoed the funding bill with a timetable in it. Congress passed a funding bill without a timetable. And Senator Clinton and Senator Obama did finally vote against it, but they voted against it after the time had run out. They didn't try to rally people to vote with them. Democrats should have been able to block that vote, but they did. But they made no effort to do it, made no floor speeches, did not announce beforehand how they were going to vote, and voted after the vote was already settled. It was going to pass, and then they were willing. That's not the kind of leadership that we need.
Yeah.
We need the kind of leadership that John represented. I think Chris Dodd did the same thing, tried to rally senators, spoke out against a funding bill that did not have a timeline in it, and I'm proud that they did. John's never voted. Though he voted for the Iraq War resolution, he does regret that. He's never voted a single time for dedicated funding for this war, and that also distinguishes him. I think Dennis is the only other person who can claim that title.
Elizabeth Edwards, thank you for your time today. A real pleasure to talk with you, and I look forward to speaking with you again as the campaign continues.
That would be a great treat for me, Peter. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. That's Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Senator John Edwards, Democratic candidate for president. I'm late for a break, so we're going to take the break and return in just a moment. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Be sure to try the chow fun noodles with broccoli and hot and sour soup. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's Restaurant in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. That's 394-5117. Jim's is top for takeout and great for catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside, 394-5117.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105. Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
I'm Jamie Langston with traffic on KRXA 540. It looks like right now we've got a problem on Highway 1 at Parrington Ridge Road, a large boulder and some rocks out there. They're in both lanes of traffic. Also, Highway 1 north of the county line, an injury accident out there has two vehicles. They've been moved over to the right-hand shoulder, but you can expect a bit of a slowdown as you come through that area. Northbound 1 at Park Avenue, a solo car accident out there has left a car the wrong way over on the right-hand shoulder. We also have a bit of a hazard south 152, right at 156. It looks like there's a scared dog out on the right-hand shoulder there, and drivers are afraid he may jump out onto the roadway. I'm Jamie Langston with traffic on KRXA 540.
Okay, I rolled it. There we go. I'm fully in charge of my technology. Can't you feel it? Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show, 26 and a half minutes past the hour. We went long with Elizabeth Edwards, and it leads us to this ugly situation where in just a minute or so, after just recovering from a lengthy commercial break, you're going to get a lengthy commercial break. Will you accept my apology?
Excuse me.
Not old age. He's got a mind like a computer, like a steel trap.
Sorry, Nancy Reagan just had to jump in there. She wanted to tell you that. Anyway, I thought it was interesting to talk with Elizabeth Edwards. One of the things that I didn't get to talk to her about that I think is also interesting is that her husband, John Edwards, in reacting to Hillary Clinton's late delivery of a health care plan, has said that if he's the next president, on Inauguration Day, he's going to submit a bill to Congress that will strip members of Congress of their medical benefits 6 months after he takes office, so in the middle of July of 2009. And that sets a very interesting frame around this issue. John Edwards saying not only that he wants to fix the health care system, but he wants to do it during the first 6 months of his presidency, if it's granted to him. Barack Obama, I believe, has said that by the end of his first term, he would pass legislation to establish health care for all in the country. So it's interesting the way they're competing and trying to show differences, because frankly the health care plans are strikingly similar. And again, my big issue is that they are avoiding what I think is the ultimate end game, which is single payer. And I think we're going to get there, but I do understand that tactically, if all the Democrats were talking about that right now, that it would create a huge target for the Republicans, and then we wouldn't even get to put this agenda on the proverbial table. So we'll watch and wait.
and see how it all evolves. We're going to take a break now, as I threatened you, and then Jason Leopold will join us. And I promise no commercials for like 15 minutes, okay? It's the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is taking your calls today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Tasered from every angle. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Last night at a University of Florida forum, 21-year-old Andrew Meyer stood up and scolded Senator John Kerry for conceding in 2004. 90 seconds later, he was up to the part about Kerry being in Skull and Bones along with George W. Bush when a guy in a suit gave the sign to cut off the guy's mic.
Society is Bush. Were you in Skull and Bones? Thank you for cutting my mic. Thank you. Are you going to arrest me? Excuse me. Excuse me. What are you arresting me for?
The campus police felt the need to pull him away from the cut-off mic. And even though he addressed the police officer as bro... The senator remained calm.
Officers, can we... Hey, folks, I think if everybody just calms down...
Meanwhile, outside, the young man learns what he has done.
Why am I under arrest right now? Inciting a riot?
Inciting a riot in a half-empty hall. And then it dawns on him.
Oh, my God, you're giving me the government. They're giving me to the government. Everyone that was here today, please... Ask them where I am, because they're going to try and kill me.
Is he headed to the gulag? Will the university police try to kill 21-year-old Andrew Meyer? We'll see. But with at least four cameras rolling and all of it on YouTube, if we do develop a Gestapo, no one will be able to say we didn't know. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat. Created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
The term UFO is too easy to debunk. Instead, for a quantum leap in mind consciousness, consider extraterrestrial and spirit contact. Consider the rhetorical quantum question, why not, as opposed to the old paradigm of why. Why not will allow you more freedom to make statements, ask questions, receive answers. New concepts are really old concepts rediscovered. Take the quantum leap at 11 a.m. Saturday on KRXA 540.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Hope you enjoyed our interview with Elizabeth Edwards. And because I'm doing a doubleheader today, some of our listeners will get a second shot at that in Sacramento and in Monterey. KSAC and KRXA, respectively, will be carrying the John Elliott program tonight from Air America. And John is not feeling well, so I'll be sitting in. And the Edwards interview will play back between 9:30 and 10 o'clock Pacific time, if you can keep track of all that.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. Didn't think that you could get so much from a picture show. Man dies first, real people ask, what's the deal? This ain't how it's supposed to be. Don't like no aborigines. Took a trip in Power Square, pop star died in hell. No fans were screaming, shouting, monsters came to flush him out. Gangland's laying on the ground, new identity must be found. For a while, sanity for him sound.
Never have really understood what this song's about, but I like it. Something about movies, picture shows, something like that. That's from Big Audio Dynamite. Jason Leopold returns to our program today. He shares with me a love of music from the 80s and 90s. And he's a journalist at truthout.org, heads up their investigative unit. And he also published that memoir called News Junkie, which is now available in Japan in so many cases. Right, Jason?
Yeah, which is so totally strange, I must say.
Well, we have at least three listeners in Japan. They listen online, and of course, it's tomorrow and very early in the morning there. But I do hear from them occasionally. So,
well, you know, that may account for those three sales.
Yeah,
that I've received so far. I think. So, thank you, Japan.
Yeah. Well, Jason, there are two of your posts at Truth Out that I want to talk about, and I'm going to let you choose the order because you have a breaking story that ties in with something our listeners know about. Mikey Weinstein was on our program last week with the threat of this lawsuit. And also you have a great post that you put up on Monday regarding the Democrats, particularly in the Senate, and what they may or may not be able to do to change the president's course of action in Iraq. So you get to choose the news today.
Well, let's talk about the lawsuit, which is, you know, we can obviously, if there's time, talk about the Democrats, because that's a fluid situation. And, you know, this lawsuit with that the Military Religious Freedom Foundation filed today, it's a long-awaited lawsuit against the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and an Army major. And it basically charges them with violating a soldier's First Amendment rights, and for the most part, pushing evangelical Christianity upon members of the military. And the lawsuit has some pretty interesting examples of what they allegedly engaged in. But what I think is interesting here is the fact that this soldier is an atheist, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Jeremy Hall.
Okay.
He's on active duty in Iraq, and he's an Army specialist. And according to him and the lawsuit, he wanted to have a meeting of other atheists, and he organized such a meeting. And this was actually last month, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that Paul Wellborn, this Army major, interrupted the meeting and was just disgusted by the fact that non-believers would congregate and talk about atheism.
And this is fascinating because, of course, John Ashcroft used to have prayer breakfasts at the Justice Department.
Right.
And
are still going on, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Are still going on, and they're going on more or less by the, Christian Embassy group that goes up there to, conduct them.
Now, who's left at the Justice Department to attend a prayer breakfast, Jason? There's the head of the criminal division and Paul Clement, who is the acting attorney general pending confirmation of Judge Mukasey.
Right.
And secretly, he was bumped in this shuffle. He doesn't get his old job back as Solicitor General. They're putting a movement conservative, a guy named Peter Keisler,
right,
in that post.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting because most people are paying attention to the Mukasey nomination. But if one of his deputies is essentially the next Gonzalez, then the fact that Mukasey is not a part of the Bush administration doesn't mean very much.
Well, let me just say that, you know, chime in on that. If there's one thing I certainly believe, and based on some conversations I had today, I do not think you're going to see a rapid, quick confirmation hearing until, you know, at least documents are turned over regarding the U.S. attorney firings, perhaps, you know, this list that was drafted of which U.S. and who the responsible individual is or individuals for that list, who put that list together and chose the U.S. attorneys to fire. I think that they are going to take their time in the nomination, confirmation rather, mm-hmm. and, you know, they'll probably butt heads once again with Fred Fielding and, you know, the president, but...
Well, Jason, I'm happy to take this digression. I wanted to talk to you about this anyway.
Sure.
And we'll come back to the military religious freedom lawsuit.
Yeah.
But in my reading of the news today, it appears that Leahy is going to demand some documents, but they don't appear to be related to the U.S. attorney firings or Karl Rove's missing emails that were on that non-government server.
Right.
And so I would, I'm happy to see them use this nomination confirmation process as a way to squeeze the White House. But I want to get all that out of the toothpaste tube, not just, a couple of inches.
Yeah. I don't believe that they want to sort of, show their hands yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that, you know, they're sticking to the word. I had some conversations with, some of the staffers in Leahy's office today, and they're working along with, Congress because they want to have some of these documents as well. But... they really are looking for, the emails, the Justice Department documents that particularly shed light on how the U.S. attorneys were fired,
mm-hmm.
who put the list together. That list, and I have to say that I'm not quite sure how it would be construed as a potential criminal act. But in my conversation with David Iglesias, he said that if Karl Rove, if anyone at the White House was, responsible for this, it could open them up to criminal exposure. I have to say that, I'm not quite sure how that would be criminal behavior. I'm still trying to wrap my arms around that.
Mm-hmm.
But, Senate said, some Senate staffer said that, in fact, that's what they're negotiating with.
Yeah. Well, I just want unfettered investigations, and I'll accept whatever the outcome may be.
Yeah.
But I want to know the truth. I want to know the facts. And
right.
I particularly want to find out if the former governor of Alabama, Siegelman, is behind bars because of the politicization of the Justice Department
right.
and its U.S. attorneys.
Well, it certainly looks that way. And if you look at the charges, or what he was found guilty of, there's something strange about it. I mean, they took his case to another district because the first judge who they took it to simply just tossed it out.
It's on a par with selling ambassadorships.
Yeah.
Well, okay, this guy Siegelman accepted a $500,000 contribution
right.
from Richard Scrushy and appointed him to a state commission that he'd served on before.
Right.
And
exactly.
and so is it a squeaky, clean, purely ethical deal? Probably not. But does it rise to the level of prosecuting the governor and what's he doing, 7 years in jail?
7 years, exactly.
Yeah.
And, what's interesting is to me is that he wrote a letter to in Alabama to, some of the local newspapers, and, they tried to get an interview with him. And, he didn't want to do the interview while he was incarcerated, but he said that if this were, if anyone actually investigates this, you know, particularly the media, you know, tries to get to the bottom of it. He believes that it would, you know, have Watergate sort of, you know, implications.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's the one that's incarcerated. You know, perhaps he may just be saying that simply, you know, to get the wheels in motion. But
yeah.
It does smell pretty bad.
Right. Anything else you want to toss out here related to Attorney General and the Justice Department? Because I want to engage in topic whiplash here and go back to
the religion issue. I should say that people should understand that this Attorney General, I mean, the nominee, what the Senate, what the Democrats are going to demand or ask for is, you know, not sweeping the mess that Gonzalez made under the rug. They still want, they still expect his actions to be investigated mm-hmm. by the next Attorney General. So that's going to, you know, that's going to be a very, very important, you know, part of the whole process is when it comes to his confirmation hearing.
Well, my favorite part of the Mukasey CV is that he once represented Klaus von Bülow.
Right. I thought, you know, it's funny because I've actually, you know, been trying to do some digging to see if there's any, you know, dirt, I guess you could say. And, you know, for the most part, this is an individual who seems like you. You know, he was your typical, you know, attorney
mm-hmm.
For many years and a judge. And when I saw the Klaus von Bülow, it was pretty interesting.
Yep, yeah. Jason Leopold with us from truthout.org. And now we're going to go back to our regularly scheduled topic that we started out
yeah.
with. And this, of course, is about the Military Freedom Foundation. Mikey Weinstein has been on our program many times.
Right.
He is a proud member of the Air Force. He's got kids and in-law kids who've been through the Air Force Academy. I think his youngest just graduated this past June. And that's where his interest in the Christianization of the military was heightened. And now he's got this foundation, and as a former judge advocate general, he is moving forward with the lawsuit that you referenced.
Yeah.
And this guy, Jeremy Hall, as you point out in the story, first came to notice because he refused to participate in a prayer on Thanksgiving last year.
Right. And you know, and again, the way they characterize the prayer, you know, I'll just say that he's an atheist. And the prayer, I guess, was characterized as, you know, having, you know, not just, I guess, Christian overtones that he didn't want to participate in. It wasn't a, you know, I don't know, you know, a non-denominational prayer, I guess you could say.
Right.
So he objected to it. And, you know, that's when the retaliation started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was ostracized, I guess you could say, in that he was told to, you know, basically sit by himself and eat his meat.
Yeah. And you got a power quote. I can hear Mikey saying this.
Yeah.
This landmark federal legislation is just the first of a galaxy of new lawsuits that will be expeditiously filed against the Pentagon in a concentrated effort to preserve the precious religious liberties guaranteed by our beautiful United States Constitution. Today, we are boldly stabbing back against an unconstitutional heart of darkness, a contagion of fundamentalist religious supremacy and triumphalism noxiously dominating the command and control of the technology and most lethal organization ever created by humankind, our honorable and noble United States Armed Forces. Wow.
Yeah, anyone who knows Mikey Weinstein can absolutely picture him saying that.
Yep, and when Mikey's not happy, nobody is happy. You know what I learned in talking with him last week? He lives right down the street from David Iglesias.
Yeah, he's actually, you know, they're old friend.
Yeah. And he also acknowledged that he may have been a factor in recruiting Joe and Valerie Wilson to move to Santa Fe.
Right.
We're going to take a break and return with Jason. Talk more here. If you want to comment, give us a call toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 12 minutes in front of the hour, and this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello. I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Jason Leopold from truthout.org. And if you've never been there, visit that website. They do a great job of bringing a progressive news and views to the web. And they've got another fundraising drive underway. Truthout.org is a nonprofit organization, and they do great work. So if you are in a position to help out, $5 or $5,000, just log on to truthout.org, and there's a donate button right there on the home page. Jason, anything else we want to mention about Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation lawsuit against the Pentagon?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously the Pentagon needs to respond to it. It's a federal suit filed in district court in Kansas. And, you know, one thing that has been interesting, at least I have to say that I've been surprised, is that when they have actually admitted, at least internally, the Inspector General issued a report. They've admitted that there's been some egregious behavior on the part of high-level officials. So, you know, they'll need to respond. But I think that, you know, we're going to see many more of these lawsuits down the road.
Right. Now, the other article you posted on Monday at Truth Out deals with the Democrats and their response to the theatrics of last week.
Right.
Petraeus and Crocker and the primetime speech from the president. And it isn't immediately clear what the strategy or what a winning strategy will surface to be. But the intent of Pelosi and, to some extent, Reid is very clear. Pelosi has been very blunt in her rejection of the president's allegations that because of the success of the surge, we're going to bring troops home.
Right.
She's a lot more realistic in those that we're bringing troops home because they were coming home anyway, and Bush is simply trying to spin it and take credit for it. But I do believe that the administration, with some complicity from the media, has helped stall the momentum of those opposed to the occupation in its current form. And it seems that the Democrats are struggling because, of course, even if they get to the magic 60 votes where they can control the debate and not be filibustered, any bill like this that they pass would likely invite a presidential veto, and you need 67 votes to overcome that. I don't see that many Republicans ready to make that move.
And that's the real issue here, is that there's a real disconnect between what the Democrats are saying publicly, their knee-jerk response, which is what everyone wants to hear with regard to Petraeus and Crocker, who testified last week. But what's going on behind the scenes is really troubling, because they're not sticking to their word. No one wants to go on record to or even put together some sort of legislation, at least today, where things stand today. Not one Democrat really wants to go the distance to try and bring about some sort of real change to the war.
Well, what you're talking about is the real leverage that Congress has to cut off funding. They call it the power of the purse, and that's an annoying phrase, but they have the authority to originate these budget bills and these supplemental bills for Iraq. And that is where they have to stand courageously and say, Mr. President, we're going to give you X million dollars and not a dime more. And this is what the money's for. It's to bring the troops home.
Right.
It's not
exactly
to continue your misadventure in Iraq.
Yeah. And every time that they, they go out there and they vote in favor of giving the president, giving Bush this blank check, is really going to, backfire on them. Part of the problem, in addition to this is just sort of on top of everything, is that the war itself, the budget has been, or the funding, the spending for the war has been so mismanaged. I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that have been wasted, and Congress has, for the past year, has had two supplemental bills. Now, we're not talking about chump change here. We're talking about, several hundred billion dollars. And they haven't really looked at what is being spent, how money is being shifted, from the fiscal year budget into other areas that, basically deprive the troops of certain things that they need. So if the Democrats are going to, say that, we won't cut off funding because we're going to keep, we want to make sure the troops have everything, they really need to take a look at, this itemized budget and see how the Pentagon has been shifting funds around, and it's actually, they're not depriving the troops.
And if they are so intimidated and fearful of being labeled as not supporting the troops, then here's the easy way out. Come up with an authorization bill that funds the troops.
Yeah.
And says, Mr. President, if you need more money for other things, call Blackwater, call Halliburton, call all your buddies, and have them loan you some money, because you're not getting it from us.
Right.
And they need to defuse the frame that they permitted to be hardened in the spring, that funding the war, funding the occupation, is about supporting the troops. It's bogus.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it, and they've got to call that out.
Yeah, and it's really, the Democrats, I said this yesterday, but the Democrats, their biggest problem that they face right now is not the Republicans. It's not getting Republican votes or getting the Republicans to side with them. It's the disconnect within their own party. Democrats right now are just all over the place. They are not a unified front. They all have competing proposals, and they are just winging it. So, they can't even get their own party their own members to side with, you know, one place to go.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to send the Blue Dogs on vacation.
Maybe permanent vacation.
Maybe put them in a kennel somewhere.
Yeah.
And feed them some, really strong science diet.
I'm sure he can do something with them.
Jason, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Hey, and thanks for staying up late last night to play with us on Air America.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. I'm going to do it again tonight. I'll be on KSAC in Sacramento and KRXA in Monterey. And you can log on to airamerica.com for the live stream. Mike Gravel, Democratic candidate for president, will kick off the show with me tonight. 7 p.m. Pacific. Coming up next, Melanie Sloan returns. We'll talk ethics in Washington, then take loads of your phone calls in the Free Speech Zone.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Stocks soared this afternoon after the Federal Reserve made a bold move to keep the economy out of recession. It lowered key interest rates by 0.5%.
I'm Dan Revive. This means the interest that banks charge each other goes down to 4.75%. Banks are resetting their prime rate at 7.75%. Adjustable rate mortgages will be cheaper, but Fed officials also issued a statement of concern that difficulties in getting credit may intensify a decline in home prices, says Hugh Johnson at the investment firm Johnson Illington.
They're saying that the risks to the economy or the risk to ongoing growth are a little bit higher now, and they've decided to do something about it.
Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
On Capitol Hill, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports the House gave overwhelming approval to some help for struggling homeowners.
The House measure does some of what President Bush proposed and goes farther, seeking to help thousands of Americans at risk of losing their homes because they took mortgages with low teaser rates that are expiring and now can't afford the higher payments. The bill, which still has to go to the Senate, would allow government backed FHA mortgages for people who miss payments after their payments rose, which would make it easier for them to refinance and avoid foreclosure.
The Dow closed 335 points higher at 13,739. The Nasdaq gained 70 points, and the price of oil rose above $81 a barrel. Traders are betting on a strong economy to keep demand high. When O.J. Simpson is arraigned tomorrow, he'll face 7 felony counts, including kidnapping. Las Vegas prosecutors filed charges today against Simpson and 3 other men who allegedly robbed the occupants of a hotel room last week. At the Phil Spector murder trial in Los Angeles, the jury declares an impasse after 7 days of deliberation. The judge rejected a defense motion to declare a mistrial, but said he might instruct the jury to consider the lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter in the fatal shooting of actress Lana Clarkson. U.S. officials in Iraq are reviewing their use of private security, and while they do, CBS News reporter Charles Wilson tells us American officials are essentially grounded.
Diplomats and civilian employees at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad will not be leaving the green zone in ground convoys, at least not for a while. The embassy has temporarily suspended travel outside the heavily guarded international zone while security personnel investigate what happened earlier this week when a convoy was attacked while driving in Baghdad. Charles Wolfson, CBS News. The State Department.
That Israeli airstrike inside Syria. CBS News correspondent David Martin says it destroyed a building believed to have housed nuclear equipment.
U.S. intelligence is not sure what was destroyed in that building, but they do agree with the Israelis that there are signs that Syria is trying to develop a nuclear capability, and specifically trying to develop a nuclear capability with the help of North Korea.
Both Syria and North Korea deny this. This is CBS News.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
know that Office Depot rewards you for shopping? Sign up now for the new Office Depot WorkLife Rewards Program. It's bigger, better, and more rewarding than ever. Now you get 10% back on ink, toner, paper, design, print, and ship purchases. Plus, 1% back on nearly everything else you buy. It's free, and there's no limit to the amount of rewards you can earn. Rewards are given as an Office Depot reward card when you earn a minimum of $10 in rewards. Certain restrictions apply. Excludes HP ink and toner. Go to myworkliferewards.com for details.
Reason number 22 to switch to Geico. We think renters are cool. Now, we don't know if you were born cool or if it's just all the cool stuff you have in your apartment. The point is, if you want to protect your considerable coolness, ask Geico about renter's insurance. For as little as $12 a month, you can protect all the stuff you hold near and dear, including that combination flat-screen TV espresso machine. Now that is cool.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Help wanted. Government agency seeks bright, motivated individuals. Must be willing to travel. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports NASA is recruiting the next contingent of astronauts.
Don't expect to fly the space shuttle. That's being retired in 3 years. These recruits will fly long-duration missions on the International Space Station, or they may be among the first Americans to return to the moon. Minimum requirements include an engineering, math, or science degree, and 3 years of relevant professional experience. Flying high-performance jets? That might help your chances, too. You can find out more, or you can apply at www.usajobs.gov.
Telecommunications in Central Texas were disrupted this afternoon when an underground fiber optic line was cut in a freak accident. A construction worker drilling holes near Interstate 35 jumped off his machine when he was stung by bees. He bumped a lever that lowered the auger into the ground, drilling right through that cable. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
So I'm driving my Chevy through the neighborhood, and my neighbor hasn't cut his grass in like a month. I want to call the cops, which would make me a jerk, but I would miss seeing the pink flamingos in his lawn. Basically, the guy's got a maintenance problem, and that got me thinking about my Chevy. Keeping it running great is important to me, and unlike my neighbor, I like taking care of my stuff. That's why when it comes to service, I take it right back to my Chevy dealer and drive it down the Goodwrench service lane.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Tomorrow, I'll get an oil change, all four tires rotated, and a Goodwrench multi-point vehicle inspection. Goodwrench and Go helps keep my Chevy in great shape, just in case I ever need to go on safari at my neighbor's yard.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Fall is a great time to Goodwrench and Go for all your maintenance needs. See your local Chevy Goodwrench dealer today or log on to Goodwrench.com.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter V. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter V's America.
6 minutes after the hour, this is the hour we set aside for your listener phone calls. We'll get to them in the next segment, so if there's something you want to talk about, I'm willing to listen. We talked earlier today with Charlie Savage from the Boston Globe, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, about the expansion of presidential powers. And we also talked with the wife of presidential candidate John Edwards. Elizabeth Edwards was with us last hour. So I'd like to hear your reaction on the national security issues and on the health care front. Grab a line now. We'll talk to you shortly at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 1-888-573-8372. But first, let's take a moment to clean up Washington, D.C. Melanie Sloan should be the sheriff there. But instead, she's executive director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Welcome, Melanie.
Thanks for having me.
You've been really busy. And first of all, I've got to commend your web mistress or webmaster. Who puts up your websites?
We have a place called New Signatures that does our website for us.
Well, this new one, Beyond Delay, or I guess it's the updated edition of beyonddelay.org, is beautiful, and the links work well, and it really brings the information right to the desktop. So I want to commend them for that. Now, you have identified the 22 most corrupt members of Congress, And people can go to the website and get details on any particular ethically challenged member that they'd like to know more about. But in the time we have, I'd like you to give little thumbnail sketches of what these individuals have been up to and why they have made your list of the most corrupt members of Congress. Why don't we start in Alaska, where the entire delegation made your list?
Yes, they did, and this is the first time this year. Well, two of them are under federal investigation. Ted Stevens, we've talked about before, had his house raided by the FBI. They're investigating whether he was taking bribes or illegal gifts from a company called Vico. And since we talked last week, on Friday, a former Vico executive testified that, in fact, yes, Vico helped pay for renovations to Ted Stevens' house. Not a good fact for Mr. Stevens. We'll all be hearing more about that. Don Young is actually the representative from Alaska.
Yeah, they only get one.
The only one. Yeah. And he's under four separate investigations. He's involved in the Jack Abramoff scandal. He's involved in a federal investigation of a Wisconsin trucking magnate named Dennis Troha. He's involved in a Florida construction scandal with a company called PBS&J, and he, too, is part of the Vico scandal. Then Lisa Murkowski, the other senator, purchased land from a big real estate developer in Alaska at a vastly reduced price, which means that she actually got an improper gift from this developer, Bob Penny, and then she got a mortgage that was not available to other people, only special to her, and she happens to have family members on the board of the bank. So that was an improper gift, two violations of the gift rule, so that put her on the list.
And that's kind of the flip side of the Duke Cunningham gambit. Instead of selling her house to a lobbyist for an inflated price, she got a deep discount on some property, and who sold it to her?
This was a guy named Bob Penny, who has lots of issues before Congress, and he's a very, very prominent Alaskan developer. And he sold Ms. Murkowski some land on the Kenai River, which is apparently a very desirable property, and he sold it to her at a very deep discount, a rate no one else could have gotten.
Very interesting. All right, let's talk about a couple of other senators. The Mitch McConnell, who is the minority leader in the Senate from Kentucky. What are the issues in his file?
Mitch McConnell is someone who really doesn't get a lot of press for his problems, but he has a former chief of staff named Gordon Hunter Bates, who formed a lobbying group called Bates Capital, and Gordon Hunter Bates has been able to get earmarks for all of his clients from Mr. McConnell, in return for which Mr. McConnell, his campaigns are very well funded by Gordon Bates and his clients.
All right. Pete Domenici is the senior senator from New Mexico. And he, of course, has been implicated in the U.S. attorney firing of David Iglesias in his state there. And it was very interesting, I noted, that the day that George Bush accepted Karl Rove's resignation in that beautifully staged White House lawn event, then the president got on his plane and flew off to a fundraiser for Pete Domenici.
That's right. And this can also help take care of Heather Wilson for us, representative from New Mexico, also on the list. Both of them improperly contacted David Iglesias before the 2006 elections to pressure Mr. Iglesias to prosecute some Democratic state officials in order to gain points in the October and November election. And similarly, we have in Washington State Doc Hastings on the list for similar conduct involving the Washington State U.S. Attorney John McKay.
Mm-hmm. And California is very well represented on your list. We have Duncan Hunter, who claims to be a candidate for president, Jerry Lewis from over there in the Inland Empire, Gary Miller, and John Doolittle, too, from up in the northeast corner of California.
Oh, and Kent Calvert.
Oh, I forgot Calvert. Okay.
Five members from California on the list. And can I tell you that all five of these members have the attention of federal authorities for different issues. In fact, today we saw that Duncan Hunter was subpoenaed by Brent Wilkes, defense contractor who is being brought to trial in a 30-count indictment. He was involved in the Duke Cunningham scandal. His trial is set to happen on October 2nd, and he has now subpoenaed Duncan Hunter as a defense witness.
Well, and Duncan will say that he can't be there because he's busy building the wall along the Mexican border. Now, what about Calvert? Who's Ken Calvert, and what did he do?
Ken Calvert has a history of using earmarks for personal gain, and he is also connected to the same lobbying firm that's connected to Jerry Lewis, Copeland Lowry. Basically, in 2005, Representative Calvert and his real estate partner, a guy named Woodrow Harpel, paid $550,000 for a four-acre piece of land near the March Air Force Air Reserve base in California, and less than a year after buying it, they sold the property for a 79% increase. And during that period, of course, Calvert pushed through an earmark for a freeway interchange that was near the property.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about John Doolittle tied into Abramoff. His wife was getting a commission on all his fundraising. And, of course, his house has been raided by the FBI. And so we'll let that one go at that. Let's see. Let's go to Pennsylvania, where we have a Republican and a Democrat both in the M category. And let's start with John Murtha, the Democrat. I haven't seen the details of your issues here, but I've been concerned about his ethics for a long time because of the way he uses the earmark process. And he's not afraid to use muscle to pressure people so that his district gets an inordinate share of the pork.
Yes, we had John Murtha on our list as someone to watch last year, and we've moved him right on up to the most corrupt category. And it's mostly because, first, there's clearly the earmark issue, and not all, he is earmarking away for a former top staff member, a guy named Paul Magliotti, who now runs a group called Magliaschetti, I'm sorry, who runs a group called PMA Group that gets more earmarks than any other lobbying firm really in Congress, I think. And they, of course, contribute heavily to Mr. Murtha's campaigns. But there was a bigger issue that really concerned us this year, which was when members took some of John Murtha's earmarks, when they questioned them, and they said that maybe some of these weren't really legitimate earmarks, and some of them really, if you knew more details, are really beyond the pale, he actually threatened two different members, saying that they would never see another earmark again unless they let his earmarks go. And that's a clear violation of House rules. You're not allowed to threaten retaliation of earmarks in return for somebody questioning legitimately your earmarks.
Yeah.
And when John Murtha did that, everybody backed down because he's so powerful and didn't bring him to the House Ethics Committee. And really, shame on the Democrats for not taking Murtha in hand here.
One of my other complaints is that Murtha is one of the top recipients of defense contractor money related to the Star Wars phony missile defense system that we've already burned $120 billion on. And somebody ought to put a stop to that. Now, what about Tim Murphy from Pennsylvania? He's a Republican.
He's a Republican, and he's under federal investigation for using his district office as well as his Washington office to fund campaign activities. And that's a clear no-no, violates federal law and House rules, and he's under federal investigation for that.
All right. In New Mexico, Steve Pierce, a Republican.
Steve Pierce, sort of a new one to people's radar screens. He has a problem on his financial disclosure form, sold the company for a whole lot of money and didn't declare it on his financial disclosure form. And failing to put that on your financial disclosure form is a federal crime. In addition, he's been pushing for drilling in a piece of in an area called Otero Mesa. And it just so happens that Yates Petroleum also wants drilling in that area, and they just so happen to be his highest campaign donor.
Oh, how convenient. Now, Rick Renzi in Arizona, he's not a new guy with ethical problems.
Oh, no, we've done the list three times, and Rick Renzi's been on the list three times. And Rick Renzi, we can say, thankfully, is retiring from Congress because of his ethics problems. He had his offices raided a couple of months ago by the FBI. He is under federal investigation for pushing a company to purchase a piece of land from a friend of his at a vastly inflated price, and then that person seemed to have funneled some of the money back to Rick Renzi.
Oh, it's all so nice. Now, here's a new one on the list, David Scott, a Democrat from Georgia.
Yeah, David Scott is on no one's radar screen. Although he's a third-term member, almost nobody seems to have actually heard of him before. But this is a guy who, if he is not under federal legation, sure should be. He has failed to pay taxes. Representative Scott and his wife own a company called Danemark Advertising. And in 2003, the company began missing its federal income tax payments that now total nearly $154,000. And since 2003, the Scotts failed to pay over $23,000 in taxes on their home. And at the same time they were failing to pay taxes on their home and business, their stock holdings miraculously increased from about $5,000 to $67,000. And they bought a $702,000 row house. So at this point, more than 40 tax liens have been placed against Representative Scott's home and business.
Wow.
In addition to that, he, too, has had allegations by staff members that he is misusing Washington, D.C. Office resources for campaign purposes.
All right. And Jerry Weller, a Republican from Illinois, I have never heard of him before.
No, you've never heard of him before, but I suspect you may be hearing more about him in the future. First, he's interesting because he married a dictator's daughter. from Guatemala. And then he's got these issues where he's purchased a lot of land in Nicaragua, failed to mention it on his financial disclosure forms. Again, a total violation. And then he's one of only two members of Congress who has said that his finances are so separate from his wife's that he doesn't have to declare anything about her assets on his financial disclosure forms, which is a highly questionable situation. And it looks like, in fact, their assets are indeed joint, and he's just not declaring them.
Hmm. Maybe he got some free legal advice from the fourth branch of government in Dick Cheney's office. And we can't forget Dollar Bill. I didn't assign him that nickname. His constituents did. William Jefferson, the Democrat from Louisiana, with all that marked cash in his freezer. It's unbelievable, Melanie Sloan. He's still in office.
It is astonishing that he is still in office, and really sad because he can't possibly be focused on the very serious issues facing the people of New Orleans when he's so busy dealing with his own legal issues. And he is scheduled to go to trial in this winter in the Eastern District of Virginia for crimes involving conspiracy, mail fraud, wire fraud, racketeering, you know, the whole kitchen sink.
Yeah. And, of course, in Louisiana, they're used to corruption, so maybe, I mean, he got reelected since these charges surfaced.
He did, and that's the most surprising thing. At the time, he hadn't yet been indicted, and I remember reading that some of his constituents were saying, well, if justice really had him, they'd have indicted him.
Yeah.
But the problem was that there had been some delays stemming from the whole search of his congressional office here in Washington, D.C., the first time that was done, and the legal issues related to that.
Read all about it. Go to the website beyonddelay.org. It's put together by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And dishonorable mentions, you know why, to Senators Larry Craig and David Vitter. Melanie, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
My pleasure. Coming up next, we take your phone calls. Want to talk about corruption in Washington or anything else? Bring it on. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Are you looking for that new dream home at a price that's not a dream? At Pacific Pride Homes, we really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year and the fact that we can offer estate quality homes without the estate price. We are now providing special financing and pricing on two of our beautiful new custom homes located in gated communities in North Monterey County. We invite you to visit us at PacificPrideHomes.com for details and directions.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy
helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, where it's 24 minutes after the hour. This is the free speed zone where your calls and comments are welcome. Have I recited the rules for you? They're simple. You can call about any subject, from any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice, and we pay for the call. It's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. First up, it's Chris in Salinas. Hello, Chris. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Peter?
Good. How are you today?
Hey, I just wanted to... I missed your interview with Elizabeth Edwards. I haven't been able to tune in.
Well, it will be rebroadcast. We recorded it, and it will run tonight when I sit in on Air America. And you can hear that, but it'll be between 9:30 and 10 Pacific time.
Great. I'll try that.
And it will be on KRXA in Monterey and 1240 Talk City, KSAC in Sacramento, among other great stations.
Anyway, I wanted to throw out that, you know, AARP has just rolled out a new internet campaign called Divided We Fail. At the same time, Hillary Clinton unveils her Republican industry-bought health care plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time in Iowa, the AARP and public television is excluding Dennis Kucinich from the debate that they're sponsoring.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy, you know?
Well, it is, and you know, the confluence of factors here where big money and influence groups like AARP take a look at the situation and want to squeeze out a Dennis Kucinich because, A, I don't think they support his radical socialist single-payer ideas, and, B, they don't think he can win, and therefore they want to try to focus on the contenders who do have that potential. And I think it's still too early to be trying to, you know, close ranks and consolidate. And I think that this is the stage of the campaign when the American people deserve to hear the detailed thoughts of every presidential candidate.
Yeah, you know, Hillary, since they're, you know, she's supposed to be a Democrat, which I doubt very seriously. I think she's a Republican. But she throws out all the Republican buzzwords, like a government bureaucracy in healthcare. You know, we can't have that. You know, we need companies that charge 30% overhead rather than 3% by the government.
Yeah. Well, I do understand that the insurance companies are the third rail. And when I talked to Mrs. Edwards, I said, look, I'm in favor of single payer. I understand that getting from here to there can be difficult, and after what happened with the Harry and Louise propaganda campaign, people need to be strategic about this. But what I inferred was that John Edwards is offering single payer as one of the options. You can continue to use your employer health care if that's what you want, but if you want government-provided health care, you're going to be able to get it. And I see that as the first stage. And I also see John Edwards as the one, as a former trial lawyer, who is most willing to take on these entrenched and powerful interests. And also, because he's so frickin' wealthy, he doesn't really need to scramble for dollars the way other candidates have to beg.
Yeah, I agree. I think John Edwards is a viable candidate for sure.
Yeah. Hey, Chris.
I would like to see Edwards Kucinich or something like that.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I got about 30 seconds, and last week I know you called and didn't get on the air, and you wanted to take me on about Cindy Sheehan. Go ahead and...
No, I didn't have anything about Cindy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that she's just like Dusty says. You say she can't win, but if you vote for somebody, they can win, you know? And Nancy Pelosi is she's no good, you know, as far as I'm concerned. She's a complete turncoat. And I have lost complete faith in her altogether.
Okay.
And I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. I hear your point of view. I wanted to give you that option. I still believe that Cindy would be better off to put her efforts into something that could be more productive, like defeating a Republican, and then getting into the House and really being able to put pressure on Pelosi from the inside.
Yeah, I think she would be defeating a Republican going against Pelosi.
Thank you, Chris. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I founded a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
President Bush says he listens to his military commanders. Well, Mr. President, I was one of those commanders, and you weren't listening when we warned you of the dangers we'd face invading Iraq. Now our military is overcommitted, and America is less secure. Mr. President, you're being told we need serious diplomacy, not escalation, and you're still not listening. If the President won't listen, Congress must.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
This is how we do it.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, your humble host, in the home stretch here on game one of our doubleheader today. I'll be live on Air America across the country tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time. Among my guests, Mike Gravel, candidate for president, former United States Senator from Alaska, where, as you heard from Melanie Sloan, the entire delegation is under investigation for its ethical shortcomings. And also on the program, we'll replay the interview with Elizabeth Edwards that you heard on this program or may have missed about an hour ago. And Robert Perry is going to join us, a couple other folks, too. We've got a gentleman, a medical doctor from Chicago, who is critical of Hillary Clinton's health care plan. And I had a request for the Air America toll-free number to help you call in. It is 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Most of you are frequent callers to Tom Hartman, and it's the same number that he uses, so feel free to give me a call. Love to hear from my base as we expand our reach this evening on Air America. Okay, one other thing I wanted to mention. Late in the program yesterday, we played the clip from Florida from the student, I think his name is Andrew Meyer, who was asking John Kerry a question in this public forum at the University of Florida, ended up being roughed up by the security folks and ultimately tasered, and it was an ugly event. Nobody came out looking good. But Ed Porter, who serves on the city council in Santa Cruz, dropped me a note. He said, you know, I held special hearings on tasers in Santa Cruz. We have problems, like most communities do. And he said, in some communities, cops tend to use them when it's unnecessary. They use them for convenience, sometimes totally unnecessarily, and sometimes with sadism. In the video you ran on your program, four or five cops decided they needed to taser this one student. It looked to me like they had him completely in their control, but they wanted to punish him on the spot. I think that's a very important point. He says, did Andrew Myers deserve to be tasered? I say no. It's corporal punishment without any conviction, and much more importantly, without any court hearing, much less any sentence. Police state? I'm afraid so. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate that comment. And by the way, there's one line open, and if you want to call and talk about the O.J. case, go ahead. I don't have any interest, but, you know, it's an open forum, and we permit that. Billy Sunshine is on the road on maneuvers in upstate New York.
Actually, it's upstate New Jersey, West Orange, to be exact.
Oh, I see. You're over in swampland in New Jersey.
I'm telling you, I was forced to visit the Jersey couple, as we call them on the Billy Sunshine show. And you know what? They're going to be dragging me to the site of Ground Zero in 9/11.
Oh.
Against my will, but I'm going to go.
All right. Well, let me know your thoughts after you've been there. I've been to New York six times since 9/11, and I have driven by the Battery area there. But I have never really had that desire to, I guess, experience the macabre as I see it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as deeply even as us Californians felt, for these New Yorkers who love the city and so much, it's a religion. It's like a religious experience. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to actually talk about, as usual, you set me up nicely, about the taser thing.
Oh, uh-huh.
In reference to the Emmy Awards. Did you talk about those and how nobody got to say what they wanted? Did somebody seem to think they got to decide what was proper to say?
Well, I kept waiting for them to give Alec Baldwin that award for best recorded cell phone call to your daughter.
Well, that would have been appropriate. But I thought the way that they handled the Sally Field, what did she say, goddamn? Is that the problem?
Well, I don't know what she said. There were several cutaways where on the west. Now, if you saw it in the Eastern time zone, it may have been live or just briefly delayed, you know, to permit a quick edit. We saw it, of course, fully delayed in prime time here on Sunday night. And I did notice several places where they rather ham-handedly edited the stage scene, went to just like a shot of the side of the auditorium, cut the audio, and then came back. And I did notice that with Sally Field, but I don't know what she said.
Kathy Griffin also was said, but I think she said something about, I'm not thanking Jesus for my award or something like that.
Oh.
And, of course, you're not allowed to say that either. And isn't that the problem? You know, the behavior that's being modeled from the very top, from this president, is that of the complete authoritarian. I don't have to see you. If you have an opinion that I don't want to hear, I can have somebody, you know, just remove you. And it's not that, well, how about tasering you just because you're inconvenient and noisy?
Yeah. I mean, when we look back at the Florida University situation, one of the things I commented to Brian here, I said, you know, they should have just done the Bill O'Reilly and cut his microphone.
I'll give you the last word. No, I won't.
No, I mean, nobody looks good, as I said. John Kerry was standing up there. He was condescending to this kid. He was really snarky, and I found it offensive.
And then stood by and let him be, let's face it, let him be assaulted.
Yeah. And you know, I thought the kid was clever. He approached Kerry and said, "You won. You won. Why did you concede?" You know, and he said, "Here, I've got this book from Greg Palast." And Kerry condescendingly said, "Yeah, I've got it. I've read it."
Yeah, and then, of course, he had the temerity to go on a little too long, to be a little bit of a pain in the neck. That gets you tasered.
Right. And I can understand that it was inconvenient and uncomfortable, but the security folks there actually prolonged it and provoked a more serious incident just by, you know, not letting the kid finish.
Well, again, the point is that, you know, that every authority figure in the world thinks that they now have control of our speech, our behavior, and that, as you point out, if they want to mete out, you know, judge, jury, and decision on and punishment right there, well, why not?
Yeah, that's Councilman Ed's comment. We'll give him credit for that. Billy, what else can you tell us? Well, you been to your favorite deli yet?
Well, you know, I haven't had a Philadelphia cheesesteak yet.
Okay.
So, you know, until I do that, no trip back east is really complete.
All right, well, nosh him up for me, and thanks for the call.
You bet, buddy.
All right. Now to Jenny in Eureka. Thanks for holding. You're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Neat to talk to you.
Go ahead.
I'm calling. Well, I listen to you almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everything. I'm right there with you. You're on the right track. Your interview with Elizabeth Edwards today, I had a problem with.
Okay.
One part of it.
All right.
The piece about restless leg syndrome
mm-hmm.
being a recreational drug?
No. Did you hear what I said? I actually corrected myself there. I started to lump it together with Viagra and Cialis or whatever that is. And my point is that we have pharmaceutical advertising to consumers.
Yes.
And if you had restless leg syndrome and you went to your doctor and said, "I've got this, is there a medication for it?" and he prescribed it, that's fine. But think of how many people are lounging in their Barco lounger and they see this on television and it becomes a suggestion. And
well,
so
actually,
the next
Peter,
time.
It was a suggestion to me because I didn't know what was wrong with me for years.
Mm-hmm.
Now I understand that the scientists have located a gene that puts it basically in families. And then I found out that my brother and father had it. And so I got it from my doctor. The first night, it was a miracle, I want to tell you. And it took that. I understand your position,
mm-hmm.
but I want to say it took that ad to get me asking about it because I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Okay, but consider there are many other ways to get that information out there. All right, they could have done a newspaper campaign where, you know, a doctor says, hey, you got restless leg syndrome. We've just really figured this out. And there's a great new medication for it. There are a lot of ways to get those messages out. My issue is I'm good with that. They take these newly developed drugs. They charge a fortune for them when they're in the patent phase. They advertise the hell out of them to create demand. And it simply costs us all much more. I hope that you didn't come away thinking I'm ridiculing anyone.
Yes, I did, so I'm glad you corrected me.
Yeah, I don't mean to ridicule anyone for the condition. My issue is that the pharmaceutical companies are exploiting that, and there are other ways for them to communicate with people and let them know, hey, there's a new drug out there for a specific condition.
Okay, may I conclude with the single-payer medical insurance is the only way to go. And I'm talking with all my friends, and, you know, I've got a lot of them listening to you, too.
Well, Jenny, my leg is shaking in agreement with you.
Oh, my God. Please don't get that.
Thanks for your call today.
Thanks, Peter. Bye.
I really appreciate it. Now to Santa Cruz, where Ed Porter's on the line. Hello, Councilman.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for reading my email. I actually am a little bit in trepidation. I have to add a few more things.
Go ahead.
You know, I did a lot of research about tasers. When I first started hearing, Florida definitely has had the most incidents of tasers of any state in the union. And, you know, they've tasered six-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
They've tasered all ages of students between 6 and 21. And they've tasered lots and lots of other people. They've had deaths from tasers more disproportionately to their population. And so it really scared me when I learned we were getting tasers, that we would, you know, if we didn't look at this really well, that we would have the same thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we've been lucky, and I wanted to add that I should have put in my email is we talked about it. We changed our rules for tasers at least three times. We annoyed some people because we changed them three times because they said, couldn't you get it right the first time?
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, you talk about these things and you figure it out, and it's not simple. If you were the first guy to tell police how to draw a gun and when to draw a gun, you would think about that a whole lot before you got it right.
Yeah.
And really what it turns out is that the taser is the same thing. And hope to God that we don't have any problems with it now, but, you know, I think we've done well in talking about it that much. But a lot of communities have not, and obviously this campus police or whoever it was, the Gainesville police that did this, you know, we're just not well trained about when is the right time to use those things.
Well, and Ed, I want to acknowledge that I understand the difficulties that an officer can face in a given situation that crops up. You don't have time to go check the manual or to radio your boss and say, you know, what should I do here? And as things escalate, officers look at the levels of force required to subdue an individual under, you know, various circumstances. And that's up to and including the use of lethal force, like a baton and ultimately guns with real bullets. And so when you look at the array of tools available to law enforcement, I do agree that tasers are much more dangerous than its manufacturer wants us to believe.
Exactly.
And much more lethal. And so I think that they should only be used in rare circumstances. And the one that I can think of is when you've got a big, beefy guy who is way out there on crystal meth or some other very powerful drug, and they really do take on superhuman, you know, they don't care if they get injured, they don't care if they're bleeding, they're kind of like an angry animal of some sort. And I can understand that when an officer feels that his or her life is being threatened by somebody who can overpower them, that you look for the equalizer. And so that all I understand. I don't think they needed equalization when there are four or five security guards there at this event. And this man was not a threat to anybody. He wasn't threatening Kerry. He was inconvenient. He was speaking out beyond what the organizers wanted him to say.
He was an annoyance.
Yeah. But as you point out, he should not have been punished and convicted on the scene without process. And to have stopped the event in order to take him out of the room or just let him stay there while Kerry answered his question. They had options available, and they went to the force option very quickly.
Yep, they sure did. It turns out, by the way, I watched that video, several different versions of the video, there were six arresting officers.
Hmm.
So, you know, you can't tell me that one college student is so out of control in his desire to have his speech time, or excessive speech time, let's say, that those six officers couldn't have controlled the situation without using the taser. So, you know, they'll learn. And actually, it was quite remarkable when I went to the university website. They had a lot of student commentary. I'll bet 20 students who were at the event got onto that website and added their comments. And they really debated this thing well. I got to give them a lot of credit for it. And they spoke on both sides of the question. Of course, there was some who thought the guy deserved what he got,
mm-hmm.
others who were outraged that this happened at a political event. I was so uncomfortable when I heard you play that, and I went and looked at the video three times, and it almost spoiled my evening until I sent you that email.
Well, Ed, thank you very much. Appreciate the context and the local color there in Santa Cruz.
Well, we'll try and get it right in the future, just like we have been.
Don't tase me, please.
I certainly
won't. Just turn me off. Don't tase me. We'll return for more of your calls in the Free Speech Zone. My number is toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We are absolutely live in vivo. And we are muy popular in Santa Cruz today. I'm not sure why. And for some reason, it's quiet in Sacramento today. Hey, you Christine Kraft listeners, where are you? Susan joins me now from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, I didn't think I was going to get on. Yeah, I wanted to say, well, also about Sally Fields, what she was saying was that if women were running everything, then they wouldn't have a GD war.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I had it on, and I was reading the paper, so I didn't pay close attention to it, and it seemed like she got really confused and lost her train of thought. So
They bleeped her out, I understand. But also the kid who...
They like me. They really like me.
The kid who was arrested, they're talking about charging him with a felony. I wonder what kind. For what? Speech?
Well, I don't know. I think it would be a real blunder to pursue
any charges.
Perry
made some statement about it today.
Did he apologize?
Well, yeah. He said he didn't realize what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't really hear it from where he was.
Yeah.
And he just... he thought it was an overreaction, and why didn't they let the kid ask his question?
Mm-hmm. Well, but when you look at the video...
It doesn't look like that, huh?
Carrie was really, like I say, condescending and dismissive to this young man, and, he kind of set the tone. I think that the security people were looking at Carrie, seeing that he was annoyed with this guy, and they were trying to shut him up and move the thing along.
Right, right. Okay, well, what I originally called about was when you said that, they were talking about these folks thinking, universal health care, what a socialistic notion, et cetera.
Right.
And I'm just kind of sick of that whole thing because every civilized nation in this world has insurance for their folks and state-run. And it's only this strange country where everything has to be the individual's responsibility. And you have to make enough money, and the insurance companies have to make their money, too. It would be different if we just went directly through a medical system.
Well, and I'm sorry, the market system of delivering health care is a total failure.
It is a total failure.
It's just that simple.
And it costs more. When she talked about the cost, I think she should look again. I mean, Dennis's figures are a lot less for delivery of a governmental health care.
Right.
The other thing, to cover all the topics that you just talked about, ARP,
mm-hmm.
They're a big insurance company.
Yep, they are.
Of course they're going to cut Dennis out of the picture.
Susan, let me jump. I got a switchboard here in a limited amount of time, but thanks for your call today.
Thank you.
Jake in Eureka, how you doing?
Hey, Peter B., how's it going?
Jake, I need an email from you because I got an email from somebody who wants to volunteer for your campaign against Mike Thompson.
All right, well, I'll do that. Hey, by the way, I do have a request for you.
Yeah?
Next time you do a Best of Peter B. Collins show,
uh-huh.
You should rerun the interviews you did with Mike Thompson and Peter DeFazio, where they both give their reasons why they're against impeachment.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to watch how condescending they were towards the callers, kind of the way Kerry was towards his journalism student at the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And, what it was very simple. This student down there in Florida was asking why Kerry didn't challenge the election in 2004 based on the disenfranchisement of African-American voters. And we all know what Florida's like, and those racist Republicans down there, it's a way of life to disenfranchise African-American voters. And those cops didn't like what that kid was saying, and they punished him. They had him on the ground with, like, four guys on top of him. One of them pulled out a taser and started zapping the kid
mm-hmm.
for no reason. They already had him under control. That's torture. That's police state stuff right there, Peter B.
It sure is. Yeah, it's over the top. And I was really shocked when, somebody sent me that video yesterday, and I said, well, we've got to get this on right away, because even though it's embarrassing to a Democrat, I'm sorry, we call him as we see him. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Peter.
Steve in Watsonville has been having cordless phone problems, but he's back. Hello, Steve.
Thanks, Peter. Melanie prompted me a few thoughts defending the Democrats, but because of the clock, let me ask, when will these neo-Hitlers propose their ultimate solution? Obviously, we have too many people and not enough oil. Therefore, they should isolate non-producing hungry mouths and grind them up to make ethanol fuel.
I see. You think we ought to thin the herd.
Well, they've established a precedent that the oil for their gas guzzlers is more valuable than the lives of American soldiers and Iraqi civilians, and it's only the next logical step to determine exactly in dollars and cents how many miles you can get in your Escalade by grinding up one American poor person.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a little grisly, Steve, but I understand your point.
Well,
it was interesting to me because Judge Mukasey... Hold on, Steve. Steve, I'm trying to tell you something. Judge Mukasey, who is Bush's choice to be the next attorney general,
right on.
At his introduction yesterday at the White House, the judge said that he wants to protect our children, our commerce, and our Constitution. And it was in that order. And to me, pandering about saving our children means it doesn't matter, you know, about the laws and the Constitution. We have this, you know, self-righteous mission to protect our children, damn the costs.
Right.
And then it was corporate interests, and then finally it was the Constitution.
No, my proposal was sarcastic, but realistically, like, with Bush's economics, the way he's wrecked the economy, imagine how many poor kids that need food stamps to live can't survive on the amount of food stamps that they get today.
Well, and you know, I hate to use these grisly metaphors, but we are chewing up young Americans, especially poor ones, in Iraq on a daily basis, and that's all about oil and the fuel cycle. Thank you, Steve. Trigger's here. I'm going to ride off into the sunset. I'll be back on the air 7 o'clock tonight on Air America Radio, 7 to 10 p.m. You can hear it in Sacramento and Monterey and many other places across the country. I hope you'll tune in. We'll be back at you here, same time, same stations tomorrow for another Peter B. Collins.
So it means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule. Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Not 0.25%. Everyone expected that. No, the Fed slashed interest rates by 0.5% today, giving the economy and the stock market a big shot in the arm. The Dow jumped 335 points to 13,739. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason has more.
The Dow's 300-point rally was its biggest gain in nearly 5 years, and it wasn't just the stock market celebrating the Fed's surprising half-a-point rate cut. In the beleaguered housing market, so were realtors like Debbie Scully.
I'm hoping this move by the Fed will be a psychological lift.
We need one. According to a new CBS News poll, for the first time since 2001, a majority of Americans, 51%, say the economy is getting worse.
Oil traders think the economy is getting better. The expectation of strong demand for energy pushed the price of oil above $81 a barrel. The charges against O.J. Simpson and three other men in that Las Vegas hotel room incident include kidnapping, armed robbery, and assault with a deadly weapon. 7 felonies in all. Prosecutors filed the charges in advance of Simpson's arraignment tomorrow. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen says the heat is on.
Prosecutors will pile on charges like these, charges that add a ton of time to potential sentences to put pressure on defendants who might be leaning towards turning on each other in exchange for a plea deal. In other words, the stakes just got much higher for Simpson and his co-defendants.
The fourth suspect, Michael McClinton, was taken into custody today. Since Israeli warplanes attacked a site in Syria 18 days ago, there have been a lot of questions about what was hit and why. CBS News national security correspondent David Martin has some answers.
Israel has clamped a tight lid of military censorship over its air raid against Syria. But U.S. officials tell CBS News the strike destroyed a building Israeli intelligence believed housed nuclear equipment. The strike was launched on September 6th, 3 days after a North Korean ship docked at a Syrian port. U.S. officials say the arrival of that ship triggered the strike against the building, which had been under surveillance by an Israeli satellite sent into orbit last June.
Syria and North Korea both deny cooperating on a nuclear program. Drivers, you're right. Traffic is getting worse. WTOP Radio's Adam Tuss reports.
In cities across the country, we're wasting our time and money.